Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. It was a late night in Calgary for the Blue Jackets. The Flames lit the lamp 56 seconds into the contest. Calgary never trailed en route to a 5-1 win. It's the second straight loss for Columbus. Blue Jackets are in Vancouver Saturday night against the Canucks. In other hockey news, Alexander Ovechkin scored his 900th career goal for the Capitals last night. Washington beat St. Louis 6-1. The 40-year-old Ovechkin's the only player in history to have 900 NHL goals. In the NBA last night, the Cavs beat the Sixers 132-121. Donovan Mitchell led with 46 points. Darius Garland made his season debut and had 8 points in limited action. In college football, number one Ohio State's at Purdue Saturday at 1 o'clock. Hear from Ohio State's head coach today at noon on the Ryan Day Radio Show. This update is sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Mark Levy's office at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. That's 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. Or visit him online at sleepbettercolumbus.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Barry here.
Well, Reese came in and he handed me papers.
Yeah.
And then, he said, "You see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me." Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do a live on a Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Paul Feinbaum coming up at 10:30. The mailbag will open that up in the 10 o'clock hour as well. The rise of Julian Sane. He was available yesterday to the media. You'll hear how he is handling all of the spotlight that has come his way in a very, very short amount of time. 11 o'clock, we will attempt to beat the House and Adam Jardy of the Dispatch at 11:30 as we'll do our official preview of Buckeye basketball today in terms of what is expected. What is required for Jake Diebler and the boys that are off to a nice start, scoring a ton of points in that opener on Monday. I did want to start here, though, as we head into this stretch of games from the Ohio State football perspective that, quite frankly, are pretty brutal. They're pretty brutal. These are not ones where you're going to have to plan your day around these. You're at Purdue this week. You have UCLA at home. That is night, so that'll have a little bit of juice to it as long as it's not crazy bad weather-wise. I haven't even looked that far out to see what's being projected. And then it's Rutgers. So it's UCLA and Rutgers at home to back-to-back in November. And then, of course, Michigan speaks for itself. But it's three straight games that are going to be ho-hum to everybody else around the country. We call these bottom line games around here. No one's going to watch these games other than people who are locked into the Buckeyes, and everybody else is going to see this pop on a bottom line and say, well, did they handle their part? Did they act accordingly? That's how everyone else is going to do it. And it's fine because in a 12-team playoff, it doesn't matter. This isn't the BCS where you have to bury people 56-7 every week to prove that you belong in one of the top two, or even in the early years of the college football playoff where you had to prove that you belonged in the top four. That's not the case. If you win your games, you're going to be in a power conference. And quite honestly, as we saw last year with Ohio State, you can lose twice and still get in. Notre Dame's going to lose twice and probably get in this year. So you can do that. There's going to be SEC and Big Ten teams with 2 and 3 losses. So our whole mentality around the sport is changing right before our eyes in terms of what is acceptable in college football. And I think one of the things that we've seen so far is that some are slow to adjust to that and adapt to that. Fan bases are. I think that's why we've seen all of these crazy firings already this year, because fan bases, boosters around the country are looking at their teams, which are underperforming, and saying, we cannot have this any longer. The reality is, for some of these spots, and if you think of these SEC jobs that are open, and I know, Bakey, you had issues with Auburn of getting rid of Hugh Freeze in terms of that, because they've been competitive in every game. You could make the same point with LSU and Brian Kelly, quite honestly. They had maybe outsized expectations to start the year. The losses start to stack, and all of a sudden you got to make a coaching change. But the reality is, and I'm not Herbie here. I'm not saying everybody's got to keep a job for the rest of their lives in college football coaching. Like, sometimes you deserve to be fired. Sometimes those buyouts have to be paid. I think Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M is a great example of that. They reached a point of no return. They had invested as big as possible. They gave him a contract that, unfortunately, they had to eat $70 million of it. That stinks for them. But there are plenty of instances where I think as fan bases and boosters, we have to ready ourselves for losses, especially in the Southeastern Conference. That is a conference right now with 16 teams. That is a conference that does not have the top, I do not believe, has the top overall quality of team of the as the Big Ten. I don't think it does. But their middle is probably better. And their bottom is definitely better than what we're going to get to see. Because guess what? We're going to see the bottom of the Big Ten over the next 3 weeks. And the reality is that you are going to win these games decisively week after week after week until you get to the Michigan game, which will be a massive test. And it got me thinking a little bit about, as we chart the path, I had asked Ari Wasserman earlier this week when he joined us from On Three, I'd asked him, if you're a coach and you're Lane Kiffin, and just use him as the example, and you look at these jobs that are open, what's most important to you? What's most important to you as a coach? Is it tradition? Is it location? Is it money? Is it NIL? Is it boosters? Is it alignment? Do I need to have athletic director, president, boosters that are all on the same page, so I'm not answering to 16 different guys? You can kind of choose your own adventure on that. I think all of those things are very viable. But when, as the Big Ten evolves and redoes this television deal, and thankfully Michigan and USC, and from what I'm told, Ohio State maybe behind the scenes, didn't have a whole lot of interest in this private equity thing that was trying to be thrown into the sport, into the conference. The decision maybe you ought to make as the Big Ten is, does everybody who we've always played in a sandbox with deserve to be invited to the sandbox? And as a fan, which would you prefer? A 12-0 regular season that is littered with 29.5-point favorite over Purdue and 21.5-point favorite over UCLA and 24.5-point favorite over Rutgers? Are you entertained by that? Is that satisfying? Or would you prefer to have risk on a week-in, week-out basis? Would you prefer to play Oregon and USC and next year Penn State and be put in Iowa, be put in harm's way? In other words, should the Big Ten think about removing some teams from its league? It really comes down to, as you answer that question, it comes down to what you want as a fan. Do you want an NFL style, almost every week's a banger? Almost every game's competitive, every single week. Do you want that in addition to a 12-team playoff? Or do you want the softest, easiest path, the smoothest sailing all the way to the playoff with a couple of potholes here and there that you got to pay attention to? At the start of the season, we identified three games that we were worried about in the regular season for Ohio State. Texas, Penn State, Michigan. 3 of 12 that we had any worry about. And we talked ourselves into Washington. They were frisky. That game was never in doubt. They were a little frisky. But which do you prefer? And I think that's the thing that Tony Petitti, the presidents, the athletic directors, the people are going to make this decision on what this league is going to be in the future. And that, if you want to add more teams to it, if you want to take teams out, or do you just hold status quo? And if you do hold status quo, do you owe it to your fan bases, let alone your television partners, to deliver more from your conference? Because right now, and there's some staggering stuff we're going to get to in a second in terms of where Big Ten games are being watched and by how few they're being watched and compared to the SEC. Right now, it does feel like there's an inflection point. And I think Ohio State's in the middle of it because of this three-game stretch we're in right now.
I would hope whatever they choose, either the Big Ten or the SEC, if they can't come together, it's the Big Ten that acts first and doesn't react. Mm-hmm. That is out in front and not reactionary to where if the SEC adds Texas and Oklahoma, everybody else around goes, oh, bleep, we've got to figure out something. Like, don't let it get to that. because that I truly believe the Texas and Oklahoma, the reaction to that is what's gotten to is what's gotten the Big Ten, what's gotten the SEC, what's gotten the ACC, RIP to the Pac-12, where things are right now. And I think if you asked fans, they'd want that happy medium where you get, you know, a handful of NFL style, you got to wear your big boy pants to this game, and some cupcakes. But if we're going to go from one extreme or the other, you can't have it in the happy medium, then I would take the NFL. And every single week, it's, you know, you've got to be ready for this. Because I think that is, it's more compelling. It certainly allows for more drama. And just cupcakes on a from a national standpoint also don't bring in the kind of revenue that an Ohio State and Texas would. If you had Ohio State, Texas quality games every week or every other week, that's more eyeballs on the product. That's more revenue for your schools. That's healthier for everybody, probably except the players.
Yeah, but who cares about them, right?
Yeah, are we still doing school? Like, are you still in the university thing? Like,
you bring up a really good point, Reese, in terms of actually leading on this. The Big Ten, despite being this behemoth, has been incredibly reactionary. Incredibly. Ever since really forming the Big Ten network, this league has reacted. And then, obviously, Rutgers and Maryland was done to feed the Big Ten network for cable buy in those markets. How'd that work out? Bake, which do you prefer? Because if you take the SEC NFL model, you got to get used to losses in the regular season. They're going to come.
I can tell you I hate all this, and I hate this talk we're having right now. And I think
you're welcome.
I think that the Big Ten is trying to be on the forefront of this. It just maybe not the way we all think they should, because Tony Petitti has already stepped out there and said our 8-4 teams deserve to be in this playoff. That's why they want this 28-24 team playoff. I think the Big Ten is trying to get out in front of this in the way of making money and being someone that wants to put content out there. But as you say, when you want to put content out there, Ohio State versus Purdue isn't necessarily great content right now. Ohio State versus what Wisconsin is throwing out there isn't great content right now. And I think maybe what Petitti's wanting to do with adding all this money into the Big Ten is if he thinks that the more money they can add in, the better these football programs can be. And all this money will raise everybody's boats up more towards an Ohio State type level. I get the NFL.
They claimed that with Rutgers, Bake, just to jump in real quick. They claimed that when they added Rutgers. Give them the money, put them in the league. And I don't always, they take a lot of strays. It's not their fault. Maryland's in the same boat.
We keep wanting to make college football the NFL, but it's just not. There are differences. There are more, you know, there are more players. There is a vast, from the best player in the country to the worst player in the country. There's a wider disparity than there is in the NFL. There's more teams. There's just a difference. So we can't make college football the NFL, but that's what we're trying to do. And we're, you know, it's obviously all about the money, and we're going to make as much money as we can. I hate this conversation.
I know you do.
It's so bad. But we're going to end up.
But we're living it.
We're going to end up with 8-4, like Tony Petitti has said he wants. We're getting a bigger playoff.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not.
I don't think it'll go to the 20s, but I think it'll go to 16. And the reason that this is the topic today is because Ohio State is embarking on Purdue, UCLA, Rutgers over the month of November. That's why it's a topic. Because this is where we're at. And I'm going to share some numbers with you that are absolutely staggering. And if you think, I mean, I've been talking about this for a decade plus in terms of the mistakes that the Big Ten made along the way. And there's some numbers that are out from this college football season that will blow your mind. We'll get to those coming up next. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
Wake up with The Fan. Eat lunch with The Fan. Go to bed with The Fan. Dream about The Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
The Fan.
You may play.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube, along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bose sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today.
At the Ohio Lottery.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine in the forecast today and significantly cooler with less wind. Daytime highs will be in the mid to upper 50s. And then for tonight, not as chilly overnight with partly cloudy skies and our lows in the upper 30s to low 40s. Scattered showers and some storms in our forecast for Friday. It'll be breezy again with daytime highs topping out in the low 60s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead. Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
Our friends at On3, they're tracking the most watched college football games so far this season. They're tracking them. So there are 26 college football games this year that did 6 million or more in audience. On this list is, I think there's four that were all opening weekend before the NFL was involved, including ours with Texas. And that's number one, by the way, 16.6 million. That's your number one. That's your number one game. This is, and let's be abundantly clear, this is not an Ohio State problem. It's not. It's an Ohio State fan conversation. It's an Ohio State pundit conversation because of what we're having to deal with the next 3 weeks and the fact that none of these games are going to be worth a damn in terms of any sort of competitive balance. It just isn't. These are not in the vicinity of talent equate games. And the reason this is the case is the Big Ten has taken an approach to scheduling of, if you have Ohio State, Michigan, and I think they believe Penn State and maybe to a lesser degree USC and Oregon, you put them against a garbage team and that will give you a minimum ratings floor. That's what the Big Ten's philosophy is. The SEC said, play all the hits. I'm sorry, Texas, Georgia, welcome to the league. You're playing each other. Alabama and Georgia in the same year that we add Texas and Oklahoma, you're going to play each other. I know you don't play every year, but we're doing it. So top 26, there are 26 games this year. Over 6 million in audience. Here's your top 10. Texas, Ohio State was number one, 16.6. Number two, Georgia, Tennessee, 12.6. Miami, Notre Dame, 10.8. That's from opening weekend. FSU, Bama, 10.7. That's from opening weekend. LSU, Clemson, 10.4. That's from opening weekend. Then it's UGA, Bama, 10.4. Ole Miss, Georgia, 9.8. Michigan, Oklahoma, 9.7, OU, Texas, 8.7, and then Penn State, Oregon, 8.5. So there's only one Big Ten versus Big Ten team game that was in the top 10. Now here's where it gets really crazy. In the next 16 highest that are all over 6 million, 11 of those games are SEC versus SEC. 11 of the next 16 games that are over 6 million are SEC versus SEC. Two of them are SEC versus ACC, Florida, Miami, and Texas A&M, Notre Dame. Two of them are ACC. TCU, North Carolina, opening weekend, Belichick debut, and Miami, Florida State. One is Big Ten, Big Ten. Ohio State, Penn State. That means in the 26 games that have been played in college football this year that have 6 million or more eyeballs on them, only two involve Big Ten versus Big Ten. Two. Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State. That's it. That's the list. That's it. There are more ACC versus ACC games ranked in the top 26 than there are Big Ten versus Big Ten.
Any of those on the CW network?
I don't think so. Folks, that's stupefying. If I would have had you guys guess before we went to break how many of the top 26 rated games in college football this year would be Big Ten versus Big Ten, my hunch is you would have guessed more than two. Two games, guys.
I don't know if
this is a problem.
I don't know if it would have been much more than two, maybe like four or five. Two's shocking. And I think it's every week. I see it from Stuart Mandel, the most watched games of the weekend.
Yeah.
And you look at what Fox gets, what Big Ten Network, if it's got a decent number gets, and you look to Fox and you go, like, well, they're paying for a lot more than what they're getting, but they're also, they also, you know, sign the check. And you, the Big Ten, I don't think when this deal and these deals were done, I don't think the Big Ten was sitting there with any surprises. Like, it's all in the brochure. You've got two, three great programs. Now, this was before you add Oregon, USC, Washington, and UCLA, and maybe you think three of the four would have been still national powerhouses, and it's kind of been just Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But the Big Ten, for as long as I can remember, has been two, three great teams at the top, and then the bottom is a bottom. That's what you're getting.
And so, they're not playing the top versus the top enough.
No. And that goes to like the scheduling when this comes out and you realize you're not playing USC at USC until what, next season?
I don't even know. I mean, how do we not play Oregon this year? How do we not play
every USC year? Yet? One of those new, at least USC or Oregon, should be on Ohio State's schedule. And the powers that be should, I'm saying should a lot, trying to inject logic into this, should have known that that had to be at least one of the tickets every year is Ohio State, Oregon, or Ohio State, USC.
It's funny because the brands that you're talking about, Reese, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on this, when you talk Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA, maybe Oregon has gotten into that national brand, but USC is the only one, I think, that maybe ticks the boxes all over the country where people are like, oh, I wonder, but USC hasn't been good recently.
They don't have one in the top 26. They're not involved in one game that over 6 million.
That's crazy because not even Notre Dame. USC Dame used to be a monster.
Nope.
And it's not there. Mm-mm. But as you're reading all those numbers, the only thing I'm thinking is, man, what could have been if Penn State would have lived up to their hype this year? But you have talked about this forever, Bo.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten missed the boat. They went for markets and not brands. And you've got to have brands. The Texases, the Oklahomas, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Notre Dames, the Michigans. Those are things that move the needle. You want to get TV. You want to get viewership. You want all of that. You've got to get big brands.
The idea that Texas... that was complicated, but Texas wanted to come to the Big Ten. Oklahoma desperately wanted to come to the Big Ten. You would have given them dance partners with Nebraska. It was the AAU certification with Oklahoma that was always cited as a reason of why they didn't get added, that academically they weren't good enough. And I remember at the time saying, who cares? Who cares? What are we doing? Yes, take Texas and Oklahoma. Of course, take Texas and Oklahoma. And if you have to take Oklahoma State and Kansas or whomever else, fine, take them. Take them, but take the brands. I'll tell you, if I were the Big Ten, I would absolutely relegate some of these teams at the bottom. I'd get rid of them. I just think they're dead weight. And I would also, if we're going to be in this world of, if we can't go back and put the genie back in the bottle and recreate regional conferences, the one thing I learned in this is Miami's got a pretty good brand. Miami rates. They've got four instances. Yeah, there's four Miami games that are in the top 26. That's more than Ohio State. Four different Miami games are in the top 26. Now, that's because of schedule, right? Miami's played Notre Dame. They played Florida. They played Florida State. So they've played those games. But to me, if I'm the Big Ten, the two schools that looking off of this and brands and all of it, obviously Notre Dame is the one you leverage absolutely. But then the other one would probably be Miami. That would probably be it, because people like that brand. They see that helmet and they associate greatness with it, whether the U is still not back, but people want to see it.
And I wonder what the, you know, it, because I think when you say that, in my mind, I go, all right, then for the Big Ten, for Tony Petitti, go get Miami and figure it out. But I don't know if anybody's got enough to pay them out. as of right now.
I think they can all get out probably before the next round of television negotiations in 2030. You could probably do it at that point. I'd love to. Ideally, I'm a traditionalist, Bake. I'd like to be what you want to be. I would love to get the Big Ten back in its own footprint. Love to get the Southwestern Conference back, get the SEC back, the Pac-12, the ACC, all of it, and have it get back to some regional common sense. But I think that ship has sailed. And I do think that the Big Ten, and the reason that this comes up today is because of the Ohio State schedule the next 3 weeks and because of what we now have as empirical data that shows you've fallen behind. This league has fallen behind.
Bo, I think the only way we get that is if we just separate football from everything else. And we have football regional majors where we're not worried about a Big Ten, an SEC, a Pac-12. And then you can keep your Big Ten and your SEC for all the other sports.
100% they should do that. Chip Kelly said that. They should absolutely do that. That would make all the sense. Separate them. Stop carrying the dead weight. Be aggressive. And it's really is time for the Big Ten's got a lot on their plate. Tony Petitti's got a lot on his plate. He's got to stop worrying about dead weight because there's too much dead weight in this league. No dead weight at the Ohio State situation, and certainly not at quarterback. Julian Sain, his rise, his ascent, absolutely comet worthy. You'll hear from him on all that's come his way over the last month. Bishop and Friends, right?
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a Thursday. We'll get to Julian in a second. Got a tweet from Mark about the conversation we were having. Definitely want better competition. I also think Ohio State is favored in every game in the SEC, just not by those ridiculous spreads that you mentioned. I agree with you. I think Ohio State would be favored, even on the road, against everybody in the SEC, except for maybe Bama and Georgia. Would probably, and maybe A&M. I mean, that might be like a 1.5, 2.5. It'd be a field goal or less. Something like that. It'd be a tight spread. But down in those places, you might be a slight dog. But everywhere else, you'd be favored in all of those games. Go ahead, Bick.
I think Ohio State right now is favored over everybody in the country. I don't care where they're playing. I think they're favored over everyone in the country right now. Now, it wouldn't have been that way to start the year.
Yeah.
But I think right now.
Yeah. The only two I thought would be Texas and Bama at their place. Maybe it would be 1.5 for one of those teams. Or
you mean A&M?
A&M.
Not Texas.
No. A&M, Bama at their place, maybe 1.5. For some reason, I feel like Bama might be more than A&M even. That Bama might be 1.5, 2.5.
I think A&M that would be closer.
So then I was thinking, how many times Ohio State, because this goes to the point of all of this, how many times Ohio State been favored by less than 10 this year? When we picked them, and I have all of this here, when we picked them, Texas, the OU Ohio State-Texas game was Buckeyes 1.5. Grambling was 49.5. OU 30.5. You get to week 4, we were off. You get to week 5, and it's Washington ended at 7.5. So there's your under 10. It was 7.5 for Washington. It was 23.5 for Minnesota. I mean, this is multiple. Illinois was 15.5. Wisconsin was 25.5. Off week, and then there's got to be one in there. Where is it? 5-5. Where was it last week?
Last week it was.
There it is. 19.5.
Yeah.
So just one. And just one of them.
Ohio State's covered everyone but OU, correct?
I think that's right. Yeah. I think they've handled their business. And a big part of that has been the fact that this country. He's finally getting used to the fact that Julian Sain is legit. It took a while. We were talking about it for a long time, but it seems like the Penn State game is when everybody kind of woke up and went, oh. A lot of people watched that game, and a lot of people got to see totally what he's capable of. He's the Heisman favorite, which is a crazy thing to wrap your head around for a guy who, at the beginning of the year, people weren't sure what to make of him. He was available yesterday on campus. He was asked about being a Heisman favorite and how he's handling all of it.
It's an awesome feeling, but you know, nothing happens without the team, and we're all focused on team success here. You know, we have a lot of great players, and you know, guys are up for awards, they're on watch list, but you know, we're all focused on team success and how can we get better each and every week and keep developing, because you know, it's all about where we want to be in December and January.
For him and Jeremiah, it's going to be a two-game Heisman campaign. They've laid the foundation to be Heisman finalists. For what they've done already this season, they will continue to buttress the framing over the next 3 weeks. It's just going to be stat accumulation games. There's not going to be any threat of losing. And so you accumulate some stats, and it looks pretty. It looks smooth, and you go about your business. For Julian and Jeremiah, it's going to come down to Michigan. It's going to come down to the Indiana game for the Big Ten championship. If they play well in those games, if they light it up in those two games, they can win it. They don't even have to be crazy statistically over the next 3 weeks. Like, Jeremiah doesn't have to catch 15 passes for 150 yards against UCLA and three touchdowns. That's not necessary. It'd probably be more like eight for 150. But that's not needed. It isn't. They catch a touchdown every week, continue to build that foundation. Julian is a video game, so he'll complete 80% of his passes the next 3 weeks. He'll throw for around 300. Won't throw a pick. Three touchdowns, no picks. I mean, that's just what he is right now. But what it'll come down to is Michigan in the Big Ten championship game. That's it. If they win those two games, and either one of those guys lights it up in those two games, and in order to win those two games, those two guys will, you're going to get a Heisman Trophy around here for the first time since Troy.
Yeah, one of those two is going to have that kind of special frame this image against Michigan. Like, I always see the indelible image of Eddie George running away from Notre Dame defenders. And like that for me, like growing up, is the image of Eddie George in his Heisman campaign. And that is something that I think they're going to have either Jeremiah or Julian or both in one of those two games to really get the national attention. I also think that the touchdowns for the next 3 weeks, if they're going to want to stay into this conversation or at least be as heavily favored, are going to have to come on deep shots. Like, they're going to have to be picturesque bombs. Jeremiah's going to have to make ridiculous climb up the ladder kinds of catches, because you've got Mendoza. And Mendoza, for a similar situation, is going to have some statistical performances. But you've got the Texas A&M quarterback, and you've got Ty Simpson for Alabama, who will have opportunities on big stages to just stat accumulate and get big wins by doing simple things.
I don't know if I totally agree that it has to be a big bomb for Jeremiah. But you do need the picture of that catch last week against Penn State everywhere, and you need another something like that. Something spectacular, some kind of play that only he can make. I wonder if maybe moving forward here, now that these Heisman campaigns are in full effect, as much as full effect for Ohio State is going to be, I wonder if maybe there is a play or two coming where Jeremiah gets a ball on a sweep and they give him a handoff rather than a pass. Like, maybe in the Michigan game, we see a big run out of Jeremiah. Maybe they put him back to field a punt even. Who knows? But I wonder if we're going to get something like that to maybe give Jeremiah a couple more data points.
Well, I don't think you need to do that in the Michigan game. I think you just need to do one of that over the next 3 weeks. So for these three games that nobody outside of us is going to watch, what you want is, hey, did you see what he did in a game that you otherwise didn't watch? And then it goes on social, and that's what it's going to be. I mean, in the Michigan game, just win and have a day. And if you beat Michigan, then it's going to be because of Saiyan and Jeremiah and Carnell and that defense. That's how you're going to beat them. That's who Ohio State is. So I think the Michigan game, the Indiana game, those games speak for themselves. Now, Mendoza's in the middle of this thing, too. They don't play a single game until the Big Ten championship against a team that has a conference win. Not one. Now, they got Big Noon at Penn State Saturday. So you get the Big Noon kick.
You'll have interest early.
What's that?
You'll have interest early in that game. So for that one, and for the 7:30 Purdue kick at the end of the season, like, those strike me as Kurt Cignetti's going to try to lay it on early.
I'll be very curious. I'm trying to will Penn State to have heart Saturday and have guts. Because it would be, I don't think there's any chance Penn State can win this game. Well, I shouldn't say that. They probably have more NFL talent than Indiana. So I don't, it is in play. They have the talent to put together. Now, if they had Aller, then this is a totally different thing. So, but if they can rely on Catron Allen, who they've been going, they got Singleton going against us a little bit last week. Can they make this frisky? Can they make Indiana sweat it out the way that Indiana had to sweat it out at Iowa? That will be, for Mendoza, that's what you're looking for. Mendoza's, he's not going to have a chance to do anything over the next 3 weeks that's going to blow any. He's in the same spot. His best chance is Saturday at Penn State, is to have some sort of moment. For the two Buckeyes, it's Michigan and it's the Big Ten championship game. And here's a bold prediction for you on a lazy Thursday in November. I would not be surprised if Sayan and Jeremiah end up like Leinart and Bush. And one wins it 1 year and the other wins it the next. Which is crazy to even say out loud. But it's very much in play.
And
it's very much in play.
It is. And I wonder for like the Jeremiah, those who question Jeremiah in like terms of accumulating stats, I don't think he needs to necessarily have numbers in the way that Julian and Fernando need to have, because everybody's in consensus. He's the best college football player in the country. Next year, consensus. Jeremiah Smith is the best college football player in the country. So I do think he gets that bump. He's gotten it right now, and he'll certainly get it next season, because if Ohio State wants to attack the national championship again, he's going to have moments in the college football playoff, which will come after this season's Heisman, but could be the catalyst into next year's Heisman. Because now that I think about it, like, do you say, well, Jeremiah's got to win the Heisman before he leaves college?
Yeah.
Because it's silly that the best college football player in a decade does not get the stiff arm trophy, despite having numbers and having moments that would certainly validate.
It's like looking back on Adrian Peterson going, what happened here? How did he not win it? What are we doing? Reese, I couldn't have made that point better myself. You nailed it. Exactly. He doesn't need 110 catches for 1,900 yards. He's known. A couple of moments in big games, good enough. It's universally accepted he's the best. Be something to win back-to-back Heismans. That's how silly those two guys have been this year. And, oh, yeah, you're going to get them again next year, too. Take a brief respite from the college football talk. The Jackets late night in Calgary. Also had the Cavs at home in their throwback uniforms as well. Early check-ins on the ice and on the hardwood coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only workplace in America to participate in the doorknob fart game. And we also play office basketball and sometimes do radio. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Way to make sure you don't miss any of your favorite fan shows.
Oh no.
Download the Fan app, silly.
God damn it, I knew that.
App Store, Google Play, or just scream right at your phone. Psst, you can also listen to Buckeye Games. Do it now.
Imagine.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURN.
Your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
I had a full dance card yesterday. I mentioned yesterday we had for the youth basketball program, we had the Cavs game, so we played another community, and we went up there and played on the court. It was awesome. I mean, it's so cool. And it's funny, our fifth grade team, so fifth and sixth graders got to play up there, and they were the first game played on that court because they had the throwback court.
Good looking court.
Yeah, so they played on that court, which I just thought was such a cool thing. But then after Beamsy's game got over with, I had to bust back home, and I had Bootsy's practice last night from 7:30 to 9 because they have a tournament this weekend, and it was our last practice before the tournament. So by the time all of that was done, I got home like 9:20, And I flipped on and watched the end of the Cavs, and Donovan Mitchell did his thing, and Darius Garland's back, and away we go. Nice. Good to see. They look great. The uniforms look great, Reese.
It was so weird to see, like, Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley in those.
Yeah.
Because that's not this era. Like, that's a bygone era of Cavaliers basketball. But I'll tell you what, like, bring those out every couple of weeks. Because it takes you back to such a good time as a Cavs fan. And I know, like, the decision, it doesn't matter anymore to me because you won the title. But, like, that was so much fun that you had back then with LeBron. And, you know, maybe you can catch a little bit of that magic early on.
I think early LeBron was the closest thing that, like, young people ever saw to, like, the Bo Jackson experience. Yep.
That's exactly the kind of athletes, like, there's never been anything like this. There will never be anything like this. And there probably will be, but, like, for our formative sport, my formative sports years, I should say.
It was something that in that first stretch, and he was probably better. He was probably at his best late Miami, and the first 2 years back in Cleveland was probably when he was at his absolute apex. But he was such a whirling dervish that first tenure in Cleveland, that it was, you just had to watch every night because he just went downhill 1,000 miles an hour and attacked the rim relentlessly at 6'8", 240. You just had never seen anybody move like that.
I wonder how often he goes back to watch those old clips and, like, he just like glances and, like, grimaces at his sciatica.
Yeah.
I mean, we all do that, right? Like, when you think to, you
sure.
Know, we don't obviously have nationally televised games that we can go just pop back on our computers to watch, but we think back to our younger years when we did stuff physically that's like, I still feel that today.
Yeah, and I think it's remarkable that he's still playing at the level that he is, despite all of that tread that is no longer on those tires, because he's a very different player now than he was then. At that point, he was get it and go. I mean, it was just a downhill sprint to the rim. People fouling him left and right. It's funny. When I think of his tenure, I think of those uniforms even more than the uniforms that they wanted in. The Cavaliers also have the craziest brand history, maybe in professional sports. I mean, there are, you just think of the various color schemes and looks and brands, and I mean, they got everything. They've got traditional wine and gold. They've got the blue and orange, which a lot of people love, which is, I mean, they basically look like the Knicks. I know you love those, Bake, but they basically look like the Knicks in those.
Oh, the Mark Prices are a favorite of mine, too.
And that's what I was thinking when we were talking about, some uniforms the other day with the Seahawks and the Broncos and how they should always wear those certain uniforms, the Bucks and the creamsicles. I think the Cavs should always wear those Mark Price, Craig Elo jerseys.
Do you think they're great, or do you think that they just are nostalgic?
I think they're better than what they do, quite frankly. I think they're better than anything I've seen since.
I think the ones they have now are pretty clean.
Yeah.
With the soft gold and the black and the wine. And I think that's their original color. I think it's so crazy that an NBA franchise, like, in just the middle of their existence, randomly switched to blue and orange. Like royal blue and orange, like to look like the Knicks.
Yeah,
I think there's a soft spot for them because they're here and they're your team and it's the fondness of your youth. But it really makes no sense at all to do that. I mean, can you imagine, like, if the Detroit Pistons just randomly went to aqua? Oh, never mind. They did.
Yeah, they did.
They did do that. Yeah. So the NBA was pretty drunk in the late 80s through the 90s.
Channeling their inner Memphis Grizzlies.
Just what are we doing? Just crazy branding. But it was fun. It was really cool. And Mitchell's a super duper star, and they get a win. That was nice. So then after that, I flip over and I turn on the start of the Jackets game against Calgary. And the indelible image for me is the image of Jody and Mirzi up in the rafters. And you see them doing the welcome shot, and you see the rafters of the Saddle Dome, not what feels like not more than 2 feet over their head. And then you realize that they're in the ceiling of that place. And you say, I've got to get back there. That was the hockey rink of my youth. I have got to get back there before they get rid of that place. And I know they're going to, I don't know when the last season is.
I think it's next year.
Okay, so I got 18 months to get back to Calgary. I got to do it because it's the greatest place you could ever watch hockey. And people say it's a dump. I don't care. It's perfect to me. They got bombed, Bake.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Two goals in a span of 36 seconds to start the game in the first minute, 32. And then two goals later on in a span of 37 seconds. The crazy thing is, early on, it felt like the Jackets were playing pretty good. And Marchenko gets that shorthanded goal, and you're like, all right, I think the Jackets are going to get back in this. And then it was one of those things where they didn't get a reward for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the goal went the other way, and it was kind of what we've seen. Like, when the negative things happen when you've been playing so well, it just kind of snowballs.
Yeah. One of 82, so no big deal. There are some trends, though, that I want to get into maybe early next week if they continue with this team that are a little, not red flaggish, but certainly yellow flaggish. Go ahead, Mike.
The Monahan possible injury here could be a really big deal for them.
That potentially would be a massive one there. So I saw the highlight of this. Ovechkin gets his 900th last night. Jordan Binnington is in net for St. Louis. He takes the puck and tries to put it down his pants while everybody was celebrating.
Yeah, it was so, I thought it was the smartest thing ever.
Would you like to hear the audio of that?
Go ahead.
Watches after the goal is scored. He's got the puck. Watch what he does with the puck. He's going to keep it in his pants. I don't know if he wants to sell it on the open market or not, but they're not going to get that puck from Binnington, but that is until linesman Michel Cormier came over and said, hey, we know you got the puck, buddy.
Good job catching that. There's cameras everywhere, guys.
Tremendous.
His eBay account would have been popping off after this game had he pulled that heist off.
That's a one-of-one puck forever.
Do you think he was serious?
No.
Or just having a laugh?
Having a good time.
Yeah, I think Binnington, a little bit of a jokester.
Having a good time. Yeah, that was quite entertaining. We'll open up the mailbag coming up next. Paul Feinbaum at 10:30. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Hey, what's up?
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Casting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Blue Jackets took it on the chin last night in Calgary. The Flames scored 56 seconds into the first period en route to a 5-1 win. It's the second straight loss for the CBJ. Columbus is at Vancouver on Saturday in game 2 of a 4-game road trip. Jackets are at Edmonton next Monday, in Seattle next Tuesday. In the NBA last night, the Cavaliers beat the Sixers 132-121 in Cleveland. Donovan Mitchell led with 46 points. Cavs are at the Wizards on Friday. In the NFL, Week 10 begins tonight in Denver. The Broncos host the Raiders at 8:15. You can hear that game on The Fan following the Buckeye Show Sunday at 1. The Browns are at the New York Jets, while the Bengals have a bye in Week 10. In college football, number 1 Ohio State's a 30.5-point favorite. Buckeyes are at Purdue Saturday at 1 o'clock. You'll hear from Ohio State's head coach on the Ryan Day radio show that hits The Fan today at noon on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Keep your friends close
and your producers closer.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Thursday. Paul Feinbaum on the first college football rankings of the season coming up in 29 minutes from now. Time now, however, to open up that mailbag.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. And you got to get it up. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present emails.
Another full mailbag this week. Let's start with Brandon. The subject, what's going on here? His message. Can someone explain to me first what is this fantasy this coaching staff has with CJ Donaldson? Also, why are we wanting the ball back up? So obviously he was like the rest of us. Why are we wanting the ball back up 17-7 with 2 minutes left in the first half just to run the ball up the middle? The play calling, whether it's Hartline or Day, is way too questionable, more than it should be. Someone explain this to me. P.S. This Penn State game is the exact reason why I can't trust Day against that team up north. All right, lots of layers here. I don't know what the reason was on it being Donaldson on that. Was Ryan ever asked directly? post game. I mean,
not that I've seen.
It ends up being so lopsided, right? And so it's like it's kind of just forgotten because you just, you know, you go and hit the bomb to Carnell in the start of the third quarter. It's 24-7. Good night, good luck. We'll see you on down the road. So it's like it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. I didn't understand it at all in the moment. I didn't, regardless of the fumble. The fumble was a byproduct. That was secondary to me. I just was shocked that they would. I understand the idea of they think we're going to throw it, let's run it, but not with that back. CJ is not that back to bust one for 12 to 15 yards and ignite a drive and let's go get. That's 25. 25 can do that. 20 might be able to do that. He had a couple of decent pops in the second half last week, but that's not what CJ is. So that part to me was odd. The CJ part of it, I think the thing you have to remember, and I think Ryan has been really brilliant and his staff has been really brilliant this year with this. They're covering every week. They're handling their business every week, and they are making sure that they are healthy for when this actually matters. It's crazy because we spend so much time talking about the college football regular season. I think Ryan Day has coached this year for the college football postseason. That's what he's coached for.
And you even heard it in the clip we had from Julian Saint earlier where he talks about specifically December and January.
Yeah.
Like you had Daytona 500 and then you had just win these games until the actual season starts November 29th.
And I don't think that should be a surprise to anyone that Ryan has coached for the postseason because that's what they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out by winning them a national championship. I will say this. I do want to see more Bo Jackson than I do C.J. Donaldson. 67 carries on the year, 266 yards, 7 touchdowns, averaging 4 yards a carry. Those aren't the worst numbers in the world for a running back. The other thing I will say about C.J. Donaldson, he is an experienced guy. He is a senior. Mm-hmm. The rest of these guys are young and haven't played a lot of football. So when you're passing, you may want a guy in there that's been around a little more, knows how to block and the blocking schemes, protection schemes a little better. Also with C.J., he was a wide receiver his whole life until he got to college, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So he's very good in the passing game, too. He knows how to run routes and catch the football. There's a lot there that I understand the coaches like. I do think, though, your best runner of the football is 25.
I think that's a fact. It's also that it's just a crazy thing that crazy existence Ryan has right now. Universally acknowledges the best coach in college football. Universally acknowledged, if any program could pick someone to coach their team, it would be him. Won a national championship, but then he still got this Michigan thing hanging over him. It's just, we just don't ever see anything like it because historically, if you lose that game, you don't get the chance to do what they've had the chance to do the last several years. So it's just such a strange spot he's in, and it really won't go away until they beat Michigan and Ann Arbor at the end of the month. All right, this one, where was it? All right, here we go. This one from Kenneth. Kenneth on this one. He writes, Julian Sand and Jeremiah Smith discussion. Hi, Bo, love the show. Ohio State 91 grad, 31 years Navy, active and reserve submarines. God bless you. Thank you for your service. And submarines? Holy smokes, man. That's an intellect that of which I am not familiar. Listen to you at work on my Motorola walkie-talkie that can tune FM frequencies. Come on.
How old's that? What's that model?
That's amazing.
Well, say that again. What?
Listen to you at work, and his work is on a naval submarine, on my Motorola walkie-talkie that can tune FM frequencies.
Good awesome. Job out of you, sir.
That's spectacular. Love the Montana stories.
Things older than the BlackBerry.
I was born in Idaho, Mountain Home. I've been to Mountain Home, but grew up everywhere else. To my actual comment, I am thrilled at the early success that Julian is having. Not sure it's talked about much, if at all, but I have noticed in many games and twice in the last game that Julian is underthrowing Jeremiah on deep routes. Not sure if it's an arm strength, late throw, defensive rush, Jeremiah too fast, or other, but hitting Jeremiah in stride on those deep balls will get both guys in the top four Heisman finalists. Not to mention, we need that deep connection to work against Michigan in later games for points to stretch the defense. Curious about your thoughts. I think there are instances where there is a little bit of an underthrow. But I think if you go back to, I can't remember the game, I can't remember if it was the Texas game or the Ohio game. It was early in the season. Ryan postgame talked about he wants the quarterbacks to put more air under the ball so that his guys can come have a chance to make a play on it. He'd rather have that than throw it without air under the ball and overthrow. He wants the air under the ball so the receivers can adjust and go make the play on the ball. I do think on one of the Jeremiah ones against Penn State, he was hit right as he was throwing, and that took a little air out of it. I would just tell you this. I don't think that there's an arm strength issue with Julian Sain at all. I think he can do whatever he wants on the football field, wherever he wants to do it.
Yeah, I think all quarterbacks have those instances where they're going to have an underthrow, but then he's several instances where he's dropped right into the breadbasket in stride.
Like the throw to Jeremiah this past week against Penn State, where he literally didn't even have to move his hands out. He just dropped him, and the ball fell right into him. Bo, we've talked about this a couple times, and I don't remember the game. It was a Sunday night football game, and it was Collinsworth that was talking about that. And he said, you want your quarterback on those deep balls, those 50-50 balls, to throw.
Yeah.
Maybe you would rather have them underthrow them, so the guy can make a play on it rather than overthrow him and he can't get to it.
That's exactly what Ryan said. I can't remember. It was early in the season. I don't remember if it was Texas or Ohio. Somebody asked him about underthrowing deep balls, and that's exactly what he said. It's exactly what you just reiterated from Collinsworth on Sunday Night Football. This one from Nick. The subject is blackout. So if anyone you know asks what the feedback that he's heard, this was in regard to the Penn State game. It just looks half-assed because we have so much scarlet everywhere. Penn State has two colors when they do a whiteout, so it pops better. They also need to address this stuff prior to the season. Maybe sell shirts or sweatshirts at a nonprofit price for the game. That's actually a pretty cool idea. Just a simple shirt with the date and opponent on it. That'd be fly as hell, actually, because now it's a unique thing, commemorative. Sell it for $25 weeks ahead of whenever game, and team up with the Red Cross. They gave out shirts for donation all the time. I do think Ross has good ideas, but I also think they're overthinking it. Like the camp song, your idea the other day about the real American hero Hulk Hogan. It wasn't my idea, it was somebody else's, but we thought it might work. I'm also back to my original choice, Johnny Cash, When the Man Comes Around. God love and God bless. I think he's right I think the only color you can do at Ohio Stadium that's an out is scarlet. I think everything else. And the problem was, we did the blackout was actually fine, but juxtaposed to like Nebraska. Like, did you see Nebraska's? There wasn't a speck of red in the crowd. Not a single speck of it. You saw the USC colors, that's it. It was pitch black. There was somebody else this weekend that did a blackout that bought all in. I can't remember who it was. There was a second game I watched this past weekend that had it as well. I think the only thing you can do is with Ohio State is scarlet out. Everyone's got a red hoodie. And then if past that, I do think his idea of if you're going to do something like this and you want to like stripe it, then give out the t-shirts to make sure that it's striped. Or if you want to do towels every week, then you almost have to give them out every week until everybody gets them. That's just kind of a loss leader. The idea that people are going to bring their towels every week, it's not in the DNA here.
I will say that the blackout wasn't terrible. It was okay. Pretty good. Like it was better than I thought it would be. And I do think probably that's if you have an Ohio State shirt, I would guess it's either red or black.
It ain't gray.
It's more than gray. Yeah, so I didn't really have a problem with the blackout. I thought it was pretty good. I just think a game like that should probably be at night, but I thought it was pretty cool. I thought they did a good job.
I think you could scarlet out against UCLA at night, and it'd look great. Night's always going to look better. It's always going to pop better at night. I think the noon part of it contributes. But I do like his idea of sell them, and then everyone's kind of, this is the official sweatshirt of the blackout. This is the official t-shirt of the blackout, or scarlet out, and then a percentage of proceeds, and never give them all because they got to find money. But a percentage of proceeds going to causes, I think, is a really, really good idea. Got one on movies and one on NFL quarterback issues. We will get to both of those coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Tweet from a listener. Are you carrying the Buckeye game today? Considering we've never not carried one, yes. The answer is yes. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bone.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Ryan Day's Buckeyes are back on the road for a Big Ten battle with Purdue. And Drew Brees has no eligibility left.
Live fan coverage starts Saturday morning at 7:30 with the Kick at 1.
Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan.
Imagine.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine in the forecast today and significantly cooler with less wind. Daytime highs will be in the mid to upper 50s. And then for tonight, not as chilly overnight with partly cloudy skies and our lows in the upper 30s to low 40s. Scattered showers and some storms in our forecast for Friday. It'll be breezy again with daytime highs topping out in the low 60s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Common Man, a radio veteran, has a large hemorrhoid. Timmy Hall, a good clean boy. Moonlight, says man's hemorrhoid. Common Man and Timmy.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan. Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast. Or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are sponsored and brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. All right, let's I had one on social I wanted to get to really quick. So we mentioned we had that email from Nick about the blackout, scarlet out, flags, towels, all of it. Nathan said, I'm sure that this has been taken care of, but concerning the towels, we got handed some for the Texas game, then tried to bring them back for the OU game, but the usher at the gate wouldn't let us bring them in. He said that nothing was allowed to be carried in. And I'm sure the red coat's just doing his job, but that would be a fail if that was the case, because they were saying, I mean, Ross was saying, bring them back. They wanted it to be something that was there every week.
You could pry the towel out of my cold, dead fingers. I'm sure is exactly what they were going for week one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
they'll never part with these. The fans won't.
No, they won't.
Can't leave the towel at home.
Yeah. I think the red's the color. If you do that, that's the one you do. I think everything else gets a little dicey, but I think if you, they did okay on the blackout. It looks, just looks better at night. All right, back into the mailbag. We got to, I get these every week. This one from Cody. Horseshoe song idea.
Yes.
Oh, baby. I'm not sure anyone has offered this, but why not Sir Elton John's I'm Still Standing as the new stadium anthem for the Shoe? Bo's checklist. Is it sing-songy? Yes. Do multiple generations know the song? Yes. Thank you, DreamWorks Sing. He's right on that one. I mean, that's in that song all the time. Is there an intro that once it hits, it gets everyone juiced? Yeah. Is there a spot where you can turn down the music and let the fans tell off the opponent? It's no Sweet Caroline for when WVU references Pitt, but it's a good alternative. A few other reasons to include: the 2022 halftime medley collaboration between Tabiddle and the Iowa band got Elton's appreciation. For what it's worth, there's a way better Elton up, a way to butter up Elton, or his reps have an issue. After last year's loss in the rival game, the message boards behind the lyrics are perhaps a rallying cry for the program and the fan base. I'm still standing. I mean, it pops. It does check every box. It checks every box. I think one thing we've learned, though, with all of this stuff, is it just kind of has to happen organically. That's kind of it. It just has to happen. This one from Adam, another one on the song. The song is Touch of Grey by the Grateful Dead. We will get by. I just don't think enough people know it. I think that's the thing. The overwhelming thing here is not enough people know it. It's got to be sing-songy. It's got to be so hit you over the top of your head, obvious, and all of those things. The I'm Still Standing one might work.
And as that much as work. I love discussion about this song at the end of the first quarter when most are going to the bathroom, you have to give it more than a season if you're going to try a song.
Yeah. It's got to be one everybody knows. It's got to be, and I think it's got to be later in the game too. I think end of first quarter, you're not ready for it.
But to give this the real college try, you've got to do it more than a year. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they brought camp back for year two, just because it's going to take more than one season for this to hit, for any traditions to hit. Right?
See, camp's great.
I don't think
it's just not. It ain't their fault.
Reese, I don't think so. I think I think Bo has always been right about this. You play the hits, and it just happens, right? Like, it happens from the beginning, and it rolls. Like, I don't think you have to give it the college try. I don't think you have to do it another season. I think you could have been done with it after three games. Like, it's got to be something, like you say, Bo. Everybody knows it, and you just roll.
Yeah, that's the thing that it's got to be. Years ago, that's why I did all the small things. Instead of work sucks, I know. Michigan sucks, I know. Like, that has that, right? And it's funny, I didn't really realize this. I honestly picked this up on the NBA. Beamsy was playing a My Career thing. So they start as like three stars in the video game, and then they go to like a lower college and build themselves up to go to Ohio State, because Ohio State won't take them right away as a 3 and 4 star. So he was doing it last night. He's playing on Missouri, and they do they do the same song, the killer song. Same one that Michigan does.
Mr. Brightside?
Yeah, they do Mr. Brightside too. And I didn't know that they did it. I thought Michigan did it, but Missouri does it too. And they go nuts for it. And they say bad words about Kansas in it instead. So, yeah, there's other, you don't have to be like the only one on, it doesn't have to be so, like, you're the only one on the planet doing it. It just needs to be something everybody knows. Like, the barrier to entry is everybody's got to know it. That's it.
Bo, I don't think people understand just how bitter that Kansas-Missouri rivalry is.
Oh, my God.
I don't think people get the hatred out there.
I think it's similar to, like, Ohio State-Michigan, honestly. I really do.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's not, I mean, it might be worse in that respect.
It's basketball, too.
It's not nearly as big, obviously, as Ohio State, Michigan, but it's pretty brutal.
Oh, they hate each other. Just completely hate each other. This one from Sean, after some pleasantries about us. He's a Browns fan. To summarize, why is drafting and developing a quarterback so hard in the NFL? I mean, there's so many layers to it, Sean. There are so many layers. And this is now my eighth season doing NFL stuff. This will be my ninth year at the NFL Combine consecutively. The incredible gap of opinion every single year on the quarterbacks is stupefying. The Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, it was all Caleb Williams. It was like nobody even, he was on his own plateau, and then everybody else was underneath. And if anything, there was, I remember Herb Street talking about Jaden Daniels. There wasn't anybody who said to Drake May, take Drake May over Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels. Not a single soul over there. I was there. We asked the questions. There wasn't anybody. So why is it so hard? Well, because these quarterbacks at the college level all have incredibly different experiences. Drake May's experience at North Carolina was incredibly different than Jaden Daniels' experience at LSU. CJ Stroud's experience here was incredibly different than the experience fill-in-the-blank quarterback had somewhere else. You're throwing to certain players. There are offenses that are built to typically, you're being recruited to an offense that fits you. In the NFL, you have to fit to that offense in many instances. And you just don't know how you're going to respond to that. I think one of the hardest things that I've had to do doing this is try to identify Buckeye quarterbacks as pro potential. I really thought Justin Fields would be, I really thought he had it in him to be like Lamar Jackson. I truly did. I thought he had that type of dual threat game. I thought he was a better passer of the football at Ohio State than Lamar was at Louisville. I really thought that was in the cards. And for about a billion reasons, it didn't turn out that way. And some of that's maybe on him, and some of that's on me for misevaluating, and some of it's on certainly the Bears for what they did with him early on in his career. But that shaded the way that I viewed CJ. I wasn't as chesty about CJ because I was so wrong on Justin. So I think it's just, I really do mean this. I think drafting a quarterback is the hardest thing to do in sport. Drafting and developing a quarterback, it's the hardest. And if you're looking for proof of this, Darnold, Mayfield, Jones. Maybe Mac Jones after this year. All of these guys were first-round picks who were bailed on.
And bailed on. The biggest problem, in my opinion, is the you've got to start him now. Like, the pressure that's put on these guys so early to get into an actual NFL game when so many are clear. I mean, it almost turned into a meme with like the Kansas City method with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, but there's a reason that worked. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes is a unicorn, but you gave him requisite time to get acclimated to this. So often you see, I mean, guys, here I go. The 4 games into the season, there's the rookie who's just not ready.
And I think maybe that's the issue, right? I don't think the problem is drafting and developing. I think the problem is the impatience mm-hmm. in letting them learn the position, because as we've talked about, quarterback of any position is as developmental as any position in sports. You've still got to play the position to know it and learn it. And all the guys you've talked about, Bo, they had teams give up on them
mm-hmm.
because the pressure was, we've got to win. This guy can't do it. We've got to go find someone else. And Reese, your point, and I think guys make it or they don't, regardless. The really good ones, the upper echelon guys, I think no matter what their situation is, they're going to make it. But you look at the Green Bay Packers. They drafted Aaron Rodgers. 3 years later, they move on from Brett Favre. They hand the keys to him. They drafted Jordan Love. 3 years later, they hand the keys to him. They move on. Now, you've got to be a really good organization to be able to do that and have everything else in place where you can spend a pick at the end of the first round on a guy yeah. that falls into your lap, and you can have him sit there for a few years. But they don't have to play right away.
No, and they developed, I mean, they develop them, they draft them, they identify them, first of all, they identify them, then they draft them, then they develop them, then they play them.
And I think
that's what they do. Like, that's the thing that is, you're right, you have to have a great organization to be able to pull that off. And you say, like, can any player elevate over a bad situation? I don't know if that's true. I really don't. Like, if Josh Allen would have gone to the Browns in that circumstance, where Hugh Jackson was the head coach, fired halfway through, to a Freddie Kitchens, to a Kevin like 3 different tenures in your first 2.5 years, do you survive? I don't know if you survive that.
I think he would have. It may not have been in Cleveland. Look at the Jets. They drafted Sam Darnold. He's thriving now. They drafted Zach Wilson. He's behind Quinn Ewers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a really hard thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. Paul Feinbaum in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Bishop and Friends present college football's most polarizing figure.
Oh, Bob, man, listen to me.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Come on back to our show, Kim. The audience hates you.
This is ESPN's Paul Feinbaum.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
And he joins on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. I'll tell you what, buddy, on my bingo card for Tuesday night's unveil, I did not have Greg McElroy defending the virtues of the Buckeyes against Joey Galloway. But that's what happened, man. And that's what happens when you randomly decide to rank teams 1 through 25 a month before it's necessary.
You're right. And I think when you sit there, and I've done that, Bo, you really just... I don't know if logic comes into it, but because I was on Get Up yesterday morning, and I just tell you this because you understand these shows, and Greenberg goes, Paul, what is your biggest gripe? And I'm like going, no, I don't have a gripe, but you can't, and you don't want to say because this is all nonsensical, but you want to keep the brand going, so you go, oh, yeah, Texas A&M should have been ranked ahead of Indiana. Like, it really matters, but it doesn't. We play along with it, and here we are.
Yeah, these things are all going to play themselves out over the next month, and so it is what it is. One thing I try to do is, are there things I can pick up on? New committee, right? New group of folks in there. Are there things that it appears they value versus what others value? Was there anything that jumped out to you on that front?
No, because I don't want to be hypercritical here, but whatever these guys and women say today will be different next week, because they say they don't pay attention, Bo. They do. They read all this stuff. They watch all this stuff, and they will react in real time. And I think the real action comes in a couple of weeks when we're down to, okay, is it going to be this school over the 9-3 SEC school? And that to me is where the action is. I mean, there are nuances, and but I always say this, and I sound like, you know, the angry guy on the lawn. But when Mack Rhodes, he's the committee chairman this year. Mm-hmm. When he comes out, he is not speaking for himself. He has been given talking points by the CFA, the CFP executive team. And they always make it clear it's a group, and that's a problem. It's a group. And group think like group do, and that's why they call it group think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a dinosaur in this. I actually thought the BCS was pretty good. I'm not sure where you stood on it, but I think kind of the mix of subjective and computers and all of it probably was the best. But this is an imperfect sport, and it's probably why we love it. Probably why we've thrived in it all these years, is because it's so subjective, and it's my team's better than yours and so forth and so on. This is a incredible gauntlet this month of November for so many of these SEC teams. And I think about Texas and Oklahoma and all of these teams on their schedule here over the course of the next month. When you kind of look at the SEC with a month to play, who do you think survives this?
Well, I mean, after you eliminate Alabama and A&M to this mix, because I think, and maybe Ole Miss, because they're pretty well protected, then it really comes down to Oklahoma and Texas as the schools who are the most vulnerable. And what I mean by that is Oklahoma plays at Alabama next week. Texas mm-hmm. plays at Georgia. If they both lose, we probably say goodbye to them. Texas is the only argument, and you know why they are, because of the Ohio State game. And that's probably one of the things that did irritate me a little bit the other night, that you start valuing beating Iowa over losing to Ohio State. And I don't know there's not another school in the country that could have beaten Ohio State on the first weekend or the second, third, or anyway through. They're just the best team right now. So I'm a little concerned about. I think Texas will have the only argument. The reason why Texas is important is that if Texas loses to Georgia, that's loss number three. They get A&M on the final week of the year, and if A&M is undefeated, that would be as good a, maybe not the best win, but it's pretty close to the best win. So that gives them some oxygen. Oklahoma wouldn't have that, because after, you know, beating Tennessee was great, but losing to Ole Miss wasn't. They'll have Missouri later on, and by the time you get Missouri later in the season, they're going to be pretty worthless.
Yeah, pretty strong message sent to the ACC, too. That feels like a one-bid league. I don't see a scenario where a second gets in. Conversely, it feels like the Big 12 might have a shot at two, especially when you think of where they put Utah there at number 13.
Yeah, I mean, the ACC in about 3 weeks has gone from a hot league to ice cold. I mean, I remember Georgia Tech and all mm-hmm. these. I heard somebody say the other day, you have no idea what it's like to have to go to Carter Finley on a Saturday night. Now, most of your audience doesn't know what that means. That is where North Carolina State plays its football games. And that's what
Chuck Amato's still there, Paul?
He is. He sure is. And I'm glad Chuck Amato, who, by the way, was a much better defensive coordinator under Bobby Bowden than he was head coach. But so that's what happened to Georgia Tech. I know I'm getting off the subject here, but just when I thought of that the other night, when the schools you did not see, LSU, Clemson, Penn mm-hmm. State, that was just stupefying to me to think about three schools that started the season in such great shape and not only are gone, but are long gone.
We have, I always felt like for the longest time that the only thing keeping Texas A&M from being in this mix, especially when we went to an NIL model, because you know that they've got money for days, was just, it's a little bit of a different place. It just is. The camp, it's a little different. The student body, the Yell leaders, all that stuff is a little bit different. When they hired Elko, that didn't even create a blip for me, Paul. It didn't. But he's done something that others have failed to do there. What is it, and how sustainable is that A&M operation as it stands right now?
It is different. Elko is one of the smartest coaches I've ever dealt with, and I'm not just saying that because he went to Penn, okay? He's about as far away from Jimbo Fisher as I've ever seen a head coach to follow somebody. And he just doesn't get hung up on anything other than coaching. He's a defensive wizard. He's very close to an amazing season. He still has to deal with a little bit of trickery this weekend at Missouri, which can be difficult, but probably won't be. And I mentioned the Texas game. Mm-hmm. But they went from the hottest coach to just it's almost like they fed it to ChatGPT and said, get us a great coach. We don't care what he looks like and what he sounds like.
No, and he's absolutely crushing it. Yeah, you mentioned it. They're at Missouri this week, then South Carolina, Samford, at Texas to finish out the year. You mentioned Jimbo Fisher. Are people down there talking themselves into it? And the reason I ask is every time he got a pay raise at Florida State, it was because LSU was snooping around. LSU's open. Yeah. He's got ties to Auburn. He says he wants to coach. He's gotten a ton of money, so he loves money, so he'd take it if they want to get every. All of us love money. Who could blame him? Do you think that someone's going to talk themselves into him?
I do, but I don't think it would be LSU or Auburn. I think he's more likely to land at a slightly off-brand place. I think he's really burned some bridges. At one time he would have been a great Auburn coach. He was a quarterback coach there for 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. He worked at LSU under Saban. But both of those places are looking in different places. But I think Jimbo can get a job, just like James Franklin can probably get a job. It might be in Virginia Tech or Arkansas, mm-hmm. or someplace weird. I was on a show in Arkansas the other day. So, hey, what do you think about John Gruden? I'm like going, not much. but that's kind of where it is. I mean, but there are just not enough good coaches to go around right now.
There are not. Take me in the coaching searches at LSU and Auburn specifically. What are they looking for?
The hot name at Auburn is John Summerall, who is at Tulane right now. You probably don't know a lot about him, but this is how you hire a coach at Auburn. His wife went there. How about that? He grew up in Huntsville and played football at Kentucky. He also coached at Troy, which is down the road from Auburn. So the people at Troy, which just has a good football program, tell me he's a defensive wizard. He's like an 80s coach, which is very appealing to a school like Auburn. LSU, I think, wants Lane Kiffin. I think the governor buffooned himself out of that one last week. I think if Kiffin goes anywhere, it will be Florida.
Going to be fascinating here over the next couple of weeks and the next month. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for your time.
You bet. Always great.
All right, there he goes. The great Paul Feinbaum joining us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Big voice guy here to remind you that you're listening to The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Okay, thanks. I have 3 more seconds. Bye-bye.
Progressive.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
It has a radio show, and we air it. What are the odds? Join us Thursday at noon for the cleverly named Ryan Day Show.
Presented by Roosters, a fun casual joint.
Every game, every season, your home for Buckeye football, The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
It's almost Football Friday. All play and no work.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for football, The Fan. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Thursday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
On Wednesday, Michigan football announced their 2026 season opener against Western Michigan will take place in Ann Arbor instead of Frankfurt, Germany. In a statement, the university said, quote, the 2026 opener against WMU will be played at Michigan Stadium on September 5th. AD Ward Manuel said in a statement, quote, we did a thorough and exhaustive evaluation in relation to playing an international game. Based on the analysis of all the factors, we felt it was best to keep the game in Ann Arbor as it was originally scheduled for the 2026 season. Of course, Michigan head coach Sharon Moore is suspended for that opener for his role in the Connor Stallion sign-stealing scandal. Wolverines have never played a football game outside of North America, but Manuel added in his statement, quote, we remain open to exploring the right opportunities for our teams to play internationally. Thing or not a thing?
So lots of things, lots of layers to this one. Number one, why would you go to Frankfort to play Western Michigan? Just start there. I mean, that's just stupid in and of itself. Like, you're going to go to Frankfort to play somebody, play another team that can bring their own fans with them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, have you guys tried to or even begun to take a look at the cost of air travel, especially internationally right now, in the midst of a government shutdown and tariffs and everything? Have you even dared to look? Can I interest you in $2,000 a ticket to go to Italy, for example, this summer? That's the reality of where you are. So if you go to your fan base and you say, hey, we're going to go to Frankfort to play Western Michigan. We're going to do what? What? Why would we do that? Why am I going to Frankfort to watch us play Western Michigan? I mean, that's insanity. That just makes no sense at Jump Street. I'll tell you the reason that I think this got canceled is because I don't think they sold any tickets. That's what I think. I think if they sold tickets, because this is I guarantee this is Germany tourism that's backing this financially from the Michigan perspective, just like they do with like the Aer Lingus airline with the games in Dublin. Same thing here. I'm guessing there's some sort of Germany tourism that was paying the Michigan freight on this. But my guess is they didn't get much in terms of ticket sales from their folks. It's always the money, kids. Always.
I don't think this is a thing at all because, Bo, we talked about a lot of these factors back when it happened. Why Western Michigan? It's got to be somebody else, another big-time opponent that you don't normally play, that you would draw. Also, and Ohio State came out and said this. Ross Bjork said this. We'll look into playing a game over there, but we're not giving up a home game for it. No. We still need our 7-8 home games, and then maybe we'll look at playing a game overseas. So this is kind of a predictable thing.
You can give up the home game if you get the money back on the ticket sales overseas. Then you can give up the home game. But you got to make up. I mean, they got 110,000 people in that stadium. You got to make up that type of revenue in order to afford to do it. I don't think people realize how closely all these athletic departments are running to the red. I don't think they have any idea. I think they just think they have money forever. They don't.
And they can't do that now with the way they're going to have to play player, you know. So
no.
They definitely have to look at things. They can't overspend on some things like they used to and keep all of the sports programs they want to keep.
Yeah.
So the game was initially slated to be played at Deutsche Bank Park in Frankfurt. That's the home of Eintracht Frankfurt, which is a team in Bundesliga. So
it, out of you on all that pronunciation.
Does feel like they were a part of this. Like, here's a bunch of money. Come play at our stadium. We'll also involve like the airlines, to your point. John U. Bacon has a great point on this that strikes him as the right decision. Ticking off loyal season ticket holders and city business leaders to play a game in Germany never seemed wise. They were smart to give it more thought and talk with more people. Earlier this morning, Yahoo Sports had the report, and it's since been parroted by a bunch of other places, that ESPN and Penn Entertainment are ending their sports betting partnership. After signing a 10-year, $2 billion deal in 2023, ESPN Bet will officially shut down on December 1st of 2025 with 8 years remaining on that initial agreement. Thing or not a thing?
It's a massive thing. They're just writing. I mean, I'd want to look at that contract.
Mm-hmm.
10-year, $2 billion, like 2 years into it. That's a lot left owed. What does that look like? And didn't Penn Entertainment, didn't they do Barstool first?
Yeah, so Penn Entertainment has been, they did Barstool, and then they sold it back to Portnoy for nothing.
A dollar,
pretty much, yeah. Like I think it was a dollar. And I just think of this from the Hollywood Casino perspective. And I just happened to be wearing my ESPN Bet shirt today. It's been the sports book at Hollywood Casino. It's been the Barstool Sportsbook. Then it's been the ESPN Sportsbook. Now it sounds like Penn is going to team up with ScoreBet or something like that. So I'm guessing it's going to be something like the ScoreBet Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino coming up. ESPN has already announced they're going to have a partnership with DraftKings. So I'm guessing if the ESPN Bet app sticks around, it's going to be paired with DraftKings somehow, something like that. It's just interesting. This was a 10-year deal that was signed in 2023, and it's already blown up.
I'm just trying to see, like, what is, like, Penn? So they have Penn Entertainment has Ameristar, Boomtown, Hollywood Casino, and they have La Brugge. Brugge? That's a hotel, isn't it? Penn Raceway. Huh. They got a lot of cash to pay for all this stuff because they paid Portnoy a boatload, and we know they did the same with ESPN Bet, so that's wild. Big story, yeah.
The Arizona Cardinals put Kyler Murray on injured reserve yesterday with a sprained foot that sidelined him since week 5. We're going into week 10. Arizona made the move a day after Jonathan Gannon announced Jacoby Brissett will continue to play as Arizona's starting QB. Brissett started the last 3 games for the Cardinals. They beat the Cowboys Monday night 27-17. Gannon also says he hopes Murray can return this season. Quote, we've got a lot of ball to play. Like I said, one day at a time. Where he sits right now is he's got to pour into his health bucket and get ready and get healthy. End quote. The 32-year-old Brissett's now slated to start for the next 4 games at the very least, starting with Sunday's game against Seattle. The Cardinals have the 28-year-old Murray under contract for the next 2 seasons with an out in 2028. Thing or not a thing?
I think Kyler Murray will be traded this offseason. I mean, sprained foot. 7 games for a sprained foot. Yeah. I mean, their offense looks better with Brissett. I do think Murray would be worth kicking the tires on. I mean, he's produced when he's healthy. I mean, he's not a stiff. It takes the right spot. You have to build something around him. But he's proven that he can play at an elite level in this league. So he's got to stay healthy. And the one thing with him, you just don't know what his give a damn is. Remember, didn't he have like the Call of Duty clause in his contract or something? So you just don't know what the give a damn is on him. But if you're a quarterback needy team, he might be worth kicking the tires on.
It's a really easy way to just bench him. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, man, you're really not healthy. Let's go ahead and put you on IR. And you know, the funny thing is, I think they do this to try to avoid questions, but it'll probably just give them more questions. I wouldn't trade for him, Bo. I think there's a lot of flash, no substance there, quite frankly. I don't know how many things Kyler Murray does helps you win football games in the NFL, and he's very slight. I'd be worried about him getting hurt all the time, especially the way he plays. I mean, he might have the best 0-60 of anyone in football because he looks shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
When he takes off, but every time he does take off, I'm worried he's going to get hammered. I know he has the baseball background, so he does know how to slide at least. Mm-hmm. But, man, if I was a team, I'm staying away from him.
In the years that he was healthy, his second year in the league, he was healthy. He led them to an 8-8 record, 67% of his passes, 39-71, 26 touchdowns, 12 picks. Year 3, started 14 games. They went 9-5. He completed 70% of his passes. He was a Pro Bowl in both of these years, 24 touchdowns, 10 picks, ran for a bunch of yards, too. He's Pro Bowler twice. And even last year, they went 8-9 with him, 69%, 38-51, 21-11. On that, and then you add in the rushing stats to it, and I mean, he's a weapon for sure, but last year he ran for 600 yards and 5 touchdowns. His second year he ran for 800 yards and 11 touchdowns. Massive. So I don't know. I don't view him quite as critically as you do. I understand your point in terms of building around him. I think you'd have to really be committed to him. And if you were, I'll just say this, Darnold, Jones, Mayfield, now, he's gotten a longer runway than those guys, and he's got health issues where some of them maybe didn't. Gives me pause on all of it, like how we handle quarterbacks. Those 3 guys give me pause. We'll attempt, speaking of the NFL, we'll attempt to beat the house coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
1, 2, 3. Here in The Fan, it's always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Casting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. Week 10 in the NFL begins tonight in Denver. The Broncos host the Raiders at 8:15. You can hear that game on The Fan following the Buckeye Show. In college football, number one Ohio State's at Purdue Saturday at 1 o'clock. Buckeyes are 30.5-point favorites there. Hear from OSU's head coach today at noon on the Ryan Day radio show. The basketball Buckeyes look to go 2-0 as Ohio State hosts Purdue Fort Wayne tomorrow night at 6:30. In the NBA last night, the Cavs beat the Sixers 132-121 in Cleveland. Donovan Mitchell led with 46 points. Darius Garland had 8 in his season debut for the Cavs. Cleveland's going to play in Washington versus the Wizards on Friday. In the NHL, the Blue Jackets lost their second straight. The Flames scorched the Jackets 5-1 last night in Calgary. CBJ are in Vancouver Saturday against the Canucks at 10 p.m. This update is sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Mark Levy's office at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. That's 1-800-MORE-SLEEP or visit him online at sleepbettercolumbus.com.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Thursday edition. It is at this time every week where we attempt to beat the house.
Beat the house.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Visit their Grandview, Gahanna, and Westerville locations to experience the best in craft dining and distilling. Learn more at highbankco.com.
All right, guys, room for improvement here after last week. Eric, you were 5-9, so that makes you 63-72 on the year. Bo, you went 6-8 last week. You are now 74-61, so still 13 games over 500 for the year.
10-17 the last 2 weeks after the 13-2 week just breaks your heart. Like, you just really had all the momentum in the world, and you just get kicked in the you-know-what.
This is the week, though.
I am not having fun.
For both of you.
Great. I don't think it will be the week for me. I don't think so.
Not with that attitude, you won't. We got buys this week for the Bengals, the Cowboys, the Titans, and the Chiefs. We get underway tonight with an AFC West matchup. The Raiders in Denver taking on the Broncos. Big number for the home team as the Broncos are the favorites by 9.5.
Vegas really frisky last week at home against Jacksonville. It's a lot. It's a lot of points. It is a lot of points. Geno Smith will throw it to the other team. I think I'm just... Denver wins. Denver wins the game. But give me the Raiders to somehow, some way, backdoor Geno Smith, Brock Bowers, Cover City, somehow, some way. I'll take Vegas and the points.
Give me Denver here. I think 10 will do it. I don't know how much of this I'm going to watch, but...
We were just talking about a game getting canceled in Germany. There is one in Germany, 9:30 a.m. Sunday morning, Olympic Stadium in Berlin. The Atlanta Falcons taking on the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are the favorite by 6.5.
The extra charged Indianapolis Colts, although I'm not sure, is Sauce Gardner making the trip over there to play in that game? I do like the Colts by a touch. I do like the Colts by a touchdown, though.
Yeah, I think the Colts lost last week in Pittsburgh. But they had 6 turnovers. Just take care of the ball, handle business. I think they will. Atlanta's a strange team, too, guys. Really strange. Like, their wins, their losses.
They're schizophrenic.
They really are. They should be much better than based on their talent. But I'm with you. I like the Colts Cover City over in the Germany.
1 o'clock, unfortunately for my Sunday, the Browns are back in action this week. But they're favored on the road against the New York Jets. The Browns laying 2.5.
Look, big picture, I don't know if it's the right thing to do because these are the teams you're going to be vying with about where you're going to pick. But the Jets were just decimated defensively. Cleveland's got health offensively coming off the bye. Tommy Rees calling plays. I think you're going to get a heavy, heavy dose of Quinshon Judkins. And I think the Browns do take care of business at New York this weekend. I'll throw the 2.5.
Yeah, give me the Browns here.
Oh, baby, both of you on the Browns train. The New York Giants head to Chicago to face the Bears, the monsters of the Midway, 4.5-point favorites.
Give me the Bears.
I just don't know what the Giants can lean on now. No neighbors, no Scataboo. Like, Jackson Dart's playing his rear end off, but he takes massive hits every single week. I'm with you. I like the Bears.
The Baltimore Ravens, can they continue here? They're 4.5-point favorites on the road at the Minnesota Vikings.
I think it's possible that the Baltimore Ravens win out and go 11 and go like 12-5. 11-6 at worst. Look at the size of this, 4.5. I don't even bat an eye at this. Ravens by a billion.
Yeah, I like the Ravens to win here, but I think Minnesota with J.J. McCarthy coming out and saying he's got an alter ego, that's worth something, right? Well, I'm going to say it is. Give me the Vikings plus the 4.5.
The Buffalo Bills down in Miami to take on the Dolphins. The Dolphins are the home dog. Big number here, 9.5.
Yeah, what would it be? Well, I guess I'll say I'm taking the Bills 9.5, and I'm trying to think maybe 14.5. Would turn me off, or 13.5 would turn me off to Buffalo, maybe.
Yeah, it's just the number. They're obviously going to win the game. It's just, you know, how frisky are the Dolphins down there? Here's the one thing that gives me pause on this. The Dolphins, the incredible, all the public money's on Buffalo. All of it, like well over 80% of the public money's on Buffalo. That gives me a little bit of pause. Not enough, though. I think the Bills win this one 31-17, something like that. I'll throw the points here.
So, Reese, just to make sure, you are on the Bills here, correct?
Correct.
The New England Patriots down in Tampa taking on Baker and the Bucks. The Bucks are the team that is favored in this one, 2.5 points. This is the Nance Romo game, by
this
the way.
This is you or me, Bo.
It's you.
Oh, Jim. Give me Tampa Bay here by a field goal.
Tampa Bay's been kind of an odd team. They had all of those big dramatic wins early, and then were beaten pretty soundly by the Lions. I'm with you. I do think this is a good, healthy game. It seems like Bucky Irvin's going to try and play in this game. So I think Tampa kind of gets right. Tampa! I'll take the Bucks.
The New Orleans Saints are in Carolina to face the Panthers. The Hot Panthers?
It's gross.
5.5 points. The Panthers are favored.
Yeah, and they're going to win by that. They now hand the ball to Rico Dowdle a lot, and they're going to handle their business. And if you're asking, is this partially a reverse jinx? God, I hope so. But I think the Panthers won't lose a game the rest of the year. And I think I'm going to be paying a 13-year-old $1,000. So I'm going to go Carolina by a billion and a half.
Is there some way, I also have Carolina in this because New Orleans stinks, that you could give them a contract with just like 30 pages and the fine print says paid in installments of $1 a day?
For the rest of your life.
For the rest, yeah.
I'll
give you the $1,000, but it's $1 each day until it's paid out.
He's so greedy that I was thinking about some other crazy double down where, like, if this happens, so right now you're going to get your $1,000 if Carolina makes the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, though, I have to come up with another bet that if you win that, like, I'll give you $20,000, like some crazy number that's just an impossible one. I'm contemplating trying to find some way to trick him is the long and short of it.
Jerry Jones gets a lot of criticism. Maybe letting Rico Dowdle walk is the worst thing he's done here.
Why would they do that?
In the past few years. The Jacksonville Jaguars, they are favored on the road against the C.J. Stroudless Houston Texans by 1.5.
And Davis Mills, the starting quarterback for Houston. Give me Jacksonville.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Jacksonville is a weird team, guys. They're a very strange team. Like, it was nuts that it came to what it came to down in Las Vegas last week. But Davis Mills bothers me a little bit, so I'm with you. I got Jacksonville winning this one.
This one at 4:05, Jacoby Brissett and the Arizona Cardinals heading to Seattle to take on the Seahawks, a big NFC West matchup. 6.5 points the Seahawks are favored by.
A lot of public money on the Seattle side of this thing. And you can understand why. Last time you saw them, they looked lights out. Divisional game, though, I think I'm going to take the Cardinals with Jacoby Brissett to cover. Seahawks win, but it's a little friskier game than most people think. I'm going to go Seattle. I'm going to go Arizona covers.
Yeah, Cardinals keep this close. Seattle wins, but give me Arizona plus the 6.5 as well.
All of Seattle or Arizona's games been a one-score game this year for the most part. 425, Bo Bishop's Los Angeles Rams, 4.5-point favorites on the road at the San Francisco 49ers.
I'll take them.
Yeah, give me the Rams to win, but the Niners cover that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's a really tight game because all these games are, so I like the Niners and the points.
Ooh, tricky Bo Bishop there. Same time, the Detroit Lions in Washington taking on the Commanders. Big number here, 8.5 points. Lions favored.
Is this Marcus Mariota?
Mariota, yeah.
So, for full disclosure,
it's Mariota for a while, probably the rest of the year.
Season. Like, they're could saying yeah. Jaden Daniels, and I heard Schefter yesterday, Rothman and Ice, and it's like, yeah, it's cooked.
This is the biggest public bet of the week so far. 83% of the public money is on the Detroit Lions to cover the 8.5. 83%. Is that justified? Is that crazy? I think it's justified. I'll throw them.
I'm so hesitant, and I'm going to hate this pick either way because Detroit, like, how many offensive linemen are they going to be down this week? You saw last week the injury bug come back to bite Detroit in the way that it did last couple of years where, like, you cannot sustain this down the stretch of the season. With that being said, I'm still picking Detroit minus 8.5, and I hate that pick.
Sunday night football, Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers heading west to Los Angeles to face Justin Herbert in the Chargers. Herbert is favored by 3.5.
Sorry, Arnold. No Chargers no this week. I think they win, but...
Yeah, the hook is what's going to bring me back here, too. I just don't know how the Chargers are going to block it. They don't have any offensive linemen. I mean, they are battered up front. I think Pittsburgh maybe found something in their defense. I don't think this game's going to be very aesthetically pleasing. I like Pittsburgh and the points as well.
And then we will pick the Monday Nighter on Monday, but it's the Eagles at the Packers, a 2.5-point home favorite on Monday night. As of right now, the Packers.
And I'll just tell you right now, I didn't like any of what I just did. So, just none of it. I just think it all sucks. Buckeye basketball back in action tomorrow night. Our views of what we should hold that team to in terms of a standard, we will get to that. And an interesting question about Quentin Tarantino. We will get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
I'm Leslie.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
CML.
Jake Diebler's Buckeyes are back at the shot for a matchup with Purdue Fort Wayne. Not real Purdue, imitation Purdue.
Live fan coverage starts Friday night at 5:30, right after Common Man and Timmy.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine in the forecast today and significantly cooler with less wind. Daytime highs will be in the mid to upper 50s. And then for tonight, not as chilly overnight with partly cloudy skies and our lows in the upper 30s to low 40s. Scattered showers and some storms in our forecast for Friday. It'll be breezy again with daytime highs topping out in the low 60s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Bake, you got some Blue Jacket news? Go ahead.
Yeah, here in the past 15-20 minutes, the Jackets have placed Eric Goodbranson on IR and called up Luca Del Belbelouz from Cleveland. The Goodbranson thing isn't probably a big deal because they already said he was not playing on this Western Coast swing. Del Belbalu's coming up probably means you're without Sean Monahan at least Saturday night. And he went off the ice in some pretty significant pain. So you're probably, again, this isn't official, but you're probably without Monty on Saturday at least, and maybe a little longer.
All right. That would be the one. Like, if we could do a show trip, that would be the one I'd like to do with you guys.
That's the one I've got
to
do.
I'd like to take it to Calgary, Edmonton. I mean, Vancouver's great too, but Calgary and Edmonton and then would be enough. That's an awesome trip.
For the show in Calgary, 9 to noon Eastern, we'd have to do it from the rafters of the Saddle Dome, right?
I'd have it no other way.
Okay.
And that would be 6 a.m. in the morning for us.
2 hours difference.
Oh, two out there?
Yeah, they're mountain time. They're directly north of Montana.
Yeah, we could do that.
God, we could even drive down to the Ponderosa.
Oh, that'd be
worth it. It's only 4 hours. I'll put you guys to work fixing fence for old Jer. Get you out there on some four-wheelers.
I've done it before in my life. Why not again? Let's revisit those days. Let's revisit the construction days.
There's nothing quite as solitary as fixing fence by yourself for 8 hours a
day. I've tied rebar, Bake. Is it similar?
I mean, I've worked with a lot of rebar.
I know, but I guess the fence fixing, rebar tying.
So.
Okay.
The key is going to be the gloves because that barbed wire will cut through. So you're going to have a strong leather glove there that'll hold up.
Good pair of snips.
Gotta have some snips. I don't know that once I was at the age of 12, I don't know that a summer day where I worked, which was most, didn't include snips somewhere. I mean, they just were kind of hanging. Like it was like a holster. With snips.
Did you have like a work belt or just the little thing on the side?
No, just the thing on the side. Because I wasn't doing all. But basically anything. I mean, cows lean against fencing. Cows bust through fencing. So you just have to be able to always fix it. And that's the job.
Or, according to Yellowstone, a bunch of bikers come by and cut your fence and have a party in your...
That was probably the only one that was relatively realistic. Not the bikers breaking through the fence, but the reaction from the landowner. I'm going to tell you what, you cut a cow fence to throw a party on private land in Montana, you will be shot. That was pretty accurate. I do think they had, I think they nailed that one.
Dig your own grave.
Yeah. By the way, this one from Hunter, apparently earlier in the show, I said something to the effect of 18 months to get back to Calgary. I think in regard to the Flames playing their last season at the Saddle Dome, he says it sounds like a Tarantino movie, which tied into an email I actually got from Dave we didn't have time to get to, but it all kind of all kismet here as it's all coming back. He wrote in part, you mentioned this week seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again and really liking it. What is your favorite Tarantino movie? I still think for me, one of the most memorable movie going experiences of my life was going to see Pulp Fiction with my brother Tuck, who's 2 years younger, and my uncle Warren in Seattle. We had begged him, we were in high school, and we begged him to take us. And he took us. He had no idea what it was. My brother got a subscription to Entertainment Weekly when he was in middle school, high school. And so we knew it was coming out. It was reviewed very highly and it seemed like something we'd be interested in. We'd seen Reservoir Dogs. So we kind of knew what we were in for. And watching that thing in a theater was ridiculously fun. Just so great. Because you've never seen, at that point, you just had never seen anything like it. So that one's always got a soft spot for me. And then I think in recent years, Inglourious Bastards is one. If that's on, I'm in. Like, I'm in on that every single time. I do like parts of Django, but some of it's just too much to stomach. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I watched it initially like 2 or 3 years ago, and I thought it was fine. And then I watched it this week, and I thought it was great. So that one's growing on me a little bit. What are your Tarantino picks?
Yeah, Once Upon a Time's really good, film.
I found myself cheering at the end.
You did
because then he rewrote the history of it. I just was like cheering for it. Like this is awesome.
I mean, yeah, it's Pulp Fiction for me.
Yeah.
And Inglourious Bastards used to be if it's on, I'm stopping what I'm doing. But I've just seen so much of it.
Yeah.
I think the one that always comes to mind, right, is Pulp Fiction. The Kill Bills were okay. I didn't love them, but they were all right.
Part one I love.
Django Unchained.
Yeah,
the, I was
Hateful
like
Eight
that
I didn't
one.
Like much at all. I didn't care for Hateful Eight much at all. And I haven't seen Jackie Brown since I saw it the very first time, like 30 years ago. That one is never, it's never on. It's never fed to me on streamers. No. I just never see it.
It was on Max like 2 years ago, and then it went away quietly.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen Jackie Brown just once. Just one time. I might have to revisit that one too. He's got one more, right? He's going to do 10. I don't know when it's coming, but I think he's got one more movie he's going to make. He's always said he was going to do 10 and kind of go with that. But, good one there. You know, in the old days when we would look at, and we do this with all of the teams that we cover, whether it's the Blue Jackets or certainly the Buckeyes speak for themselves, talk about them year round, but something like Buckeye basketball, we would always say, okay, well, what standard are we going to hold them to? And it's interesting because it feels like over the last decade or so, we have held Ohio State's standard very similar in that also similar to how we do the Blue Jackets. So for the Blue Jackets, we say for the longest time, it's been chase the eight, make the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like we've never had a higher expectation than that. It's never been go win the East. It's never been go win the cup. It's always been chase the eight, make the playoffs. Give us some fun stuff in March and April. I mean, that's what it's been for the longest time with them. And Buckeye basketball has kind of turned into that. They've kind of turned into, I was thinking about this recently. You've been with me for a long time, longer than Bake. Have we ever gone into Buckeye basketball season and said something other than make the tournament? I think maybe the EJ Liddell junior year, we were like, get to the second weekend.
Make it out of the first weekend in the tournament.
Yeah. But it feels like it's usually make the tournament.
Yeah.
Is there any reason to... This should be more than that. It should be. But college basketball is so different now that unless you're Jacob Reimer and you're watching 1,000 games a day, these teams change so much from now to what they are in February. Look, you got veteran guards. You can shoot it. You got length. You got bigs. You got an old team with some young talent underneath it. You're experienced. This should be a Sweet 16 type team, but nobody is talking about this team that way. Nobody. They're not ranked. They're not like a sneaky team that anybody's talking about. It's like they're completely under the radar, which I'm guessing Jake likes. But to me, when I look at this roster construction and I see all these veterans back, I see this guard play, I see what was done in the portal. To me, this feels like get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Now, I'm not going to hold them to that standard because they haven't even been to the tournament in a while. So that would be a big leap. So I suppose it's just get in, win a game. But to me, this feels like they should have a higher expectation than that.
This team, I think, should be an at-large quality bid in the NCAA. Not doing anything Dayton. Have a nice run in the Big Ten tournament. They are, just for what it's worth, in the others receiving votes category. But I think to your point is nobody knows what this whole thing is going to look like because you do have veteran play. You have, you know, Bruce and now Devin's a veteran and you got, you know, Junie Mobley coming along. But what do they all look like with Brandon Knoll? What do they look like with Christoph Tilly when you get into January and February? It's just a giant question mark.
So for me, I am still a just make the tournament for this Buckeye basketball team. Until I see someone, and this is no knock on him. People are going to come at me saying that I'm knocking Bruce Thornton, and I am not knocking Bruce Thornton. But until I see someone on this team step up and be Batman, I feel like Ohio State has a ceiling with Bruce Thornton as your number one. Bruce Thornton is a really, really good college basketball player.
Yeah.
And he is... been awesome for Ohio State, but you can only go so far with Bruce Thornton as your Batman on a team that's a Sweet 16 or more team. Bruce Thornton's probably a number three option on a lot of those teams, and a team that wins the NCAA championship, he's probably like a number four or five. And again, there's no knock on him. He's a good player. It's just limitations. So I need someone.
He's miscast.
I need Joni Mobley to be a true number one all the time. I don't know if he's there. I don't know if Devin Royal is a number one. Christoph Tilly was great in that opening game. I don't know if you can get that from him for a full season. So until I see someone step up and take the reins... this Ohio State basketball team is just a, let's hope they make the tournament to me.
I don't know if this is a I can be Batman, but certainly a healthy Gabe Cups.
That's not Batman.
No, but
it helps, but
can certainly help with making this a team that can compete late.
To buttress both of your points, in order to make runs, you got to have pros.
Yes.
You have to have pros.
Who is the pro on this team?
Who's the pro? Like, there's a bunch of guys going to make it overseas, but who is the draft pick? You have to have draft picks. I mean, that's what's the requirement. If you're going to go win national titles, you're going to go try and chase them down. You got to have that level of talent. And maybe it's Tilly. I don't know. We'll ask Adam Jardy because he does know, and he'll join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And guest hotline is sponsored by Weston Air Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, or whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
I always enjoy this conversation. Well, I always enjoy talking to Adam Jardy. He covers the Buckeyes at the Dispatch, but I always enjoy the one where we decide, all right, what standard are we going to hold this team to? We do it every year around this time. We got one game in, and so there's some things perhaps you can glean from that. I loved your question with Jake listening post-game about, like, how do you judge what you are defensively with the way that all of that went? But let's just start with a big, broad one first, buddy, and that is this. What standard are you holding this team to this season?
They got to make the tournament. I mean, I think that's bottom line, and they'll tell you the standards are higher than that, and they don't want to be content with just making it in some way, shape, or form. But I think it's been too long for Ohio State men's basketball fans, and I think the talent is there. I think they have built a roster that's clearly capable of getting there, so they got to do that. I think that's the bottom line to me.
So as we were talking about this in the previous segment, The roster is one that fits that exactly and maybe more. Veterans, a lot of guards who've played a lot of games. You bring in Cups and put him in that rotation with Junie and Bruce, and okay, that's pretty good. You got very active in the transfer portal. Devin Royal somehow, some way, I guess, is all of a sudden a junior, which seems kind of crazy. Like, the make of this team is very veteran. They've got guards. They can shoot it. They got some length in the portal. Should we be expecting more? And if not, why aren't we?
I think the reason that we're not expecting more is because of just kind of how the last couple of years have gone. And that's not entirely fair to Jake, because he wasn't the head coach, you know, until last season. And last season, you know, we talked about it all off season. Like, he built a roster while also building a coaching staff. Like, those are all, you can look at those as excuses, but those are also like legitimate reasons as to why maybe things didn't fit together the way that they should have last year. But I think the reason that we're not saying, yeah, this team should make a second weekend, or, oh yeah, this team should be a dark horse to challenge at the top of the Big Ten, is just that I think we're all kind of in wait and see mode. Like, I just think the program as a whole has had flashes and certainly has had talented players and has had good seasons. But I think that we're all just kind of waiting to see it actually happen. Even if the roster does look like it's better equipped to get there than some of the ones we've seen the last few years.
So typically, if you're going to be one of those teams that gets to the Sweet 16, you're going to be one of those teams that, God forbid, goes to the Final Four, those type of teams, you've got to have pros. Who are the pros on this roster?
Now, there's a great question. I think we could have a really interesting debate on who's the first player on this roster to play a minute in the NBA. Because, I mean, maybe Amari Bynum, I mean, maybe Bruce Thornton is a guy who can get on a roster and stick at the back end of a rotation. Other than that, I mean, they kind of have maybe Christoph Tilly, if he puts together like the breakout type of season that I think is possible. I think his skill set kind of sets him up for the modern game. But I think that's a fair point to make when you wonder, like, how far could this team go? Is that I don't know that we can definitively say they have 1, 2, 3, how many NBA players on the roster. Like, I can make a case if you really wanted me to for quite a few of them, but there's no like surefire, this guy's the next NBA guy. And maybe that does limit a potential ceiling for them.
Which can be a positive, because you could make a great living playing college basketball now, as you know, you're on that, you know, what's being paid for all these guys and what's being paid for the guys coming in next year. But the reality is that there's not anybody who looks like a one to me. I mean, what you just kind of laid out there was second round free agent type thing. I mean, we're just talking about minutes played. So, you can do it. It's different. And I think that's what makes handicapping this all so hard. And you do this on a daily basis in terms of covering college basketball. How do you try to handicap what these teams are when you have all of this volatility roster wise that we have?
It's almost impossible in the off season. I mean, it feels more and more like you're really just kind of throwing darts blindfolded at a board and just saying, well, I think this. I mean, like, to me, you have to, no one's quite figured it out. I think you got to thread that needle. Like, you want experienced guys who are talented that want to be there, and you got to figure out a way to mesh that with some new pieces you're going to bring in the portal. I do think experience matters, like, to some extent. And I think that, you know, continuity is always going to serve you well in college basketball, especially now that we're getting out of the extra COVID year and rosters are going to start getting a little bit younger. You know, you're not going to be seeing like the 6 year guys quite nearly as frequently as we have the last few years. So, you know, having that roster continuity, I feel like, becomes more and more important even as the rosters do get younger. And to bring back the guys that they brought back, I think, is fairly critical to this team's success. And I think that's probably, most coaches in America would tell you, if they want to build a roster for next year, that's where they start. They want to bring back the guys that they care, that, you know, are the best contributors, that have the most experience. Like, that's the nucleus you want to build around. And so, to Ohio State's credit, they did that this year.
They did. Yeah. I mean, that's why they were really strategic in the portal. If you think about, if this team is going to be a tournament team, if this team is going to be a team that potentially gets to a second round and plays to the standard that Jake thinks it can play to, who are a couple of guys, and you've seen some scrimmages, you've seen a lot of practice, and you saw a game obviously on Monday, and we'll see one tomorrow night. Who are some guys who need to take a big step?
Let's see. Christoph Tilley is at the top of my list, which is an interesting one, because he's been a significant contributor pretty much from day one. But just he's a guy that, he's not on the national radar, but I think he could be. And I think for them to get where they want to be, like, this will be a breakout year for him. So I think you're asking him to go from, you know, major contributor on a team that no one really is paying attention to a focal point on a team with high aspirations. So he's got to take a step. He's at the top of my list. You know, I would look at, like, you know, you mentioned Gabe Cupps, and I think, like, all the defensive things that he brings and the intensity and all that, the attitude and all that stuff, like, you know, you'd like to see him step into a consistent, productive role off that bench. You know, after that, I don't know, like, you want Amari Bynum. I think he's unanimous pick on this roster as the best dunker on the team, and I think he's a guy that could really flash this season. So you'd like to see him go from – he looked shaky as a freshman. He looked like it was – his first game, but I think, you know, he's a guy that there's some pretty high upside there. So if he takes a big step and becomes a force by the time they get to Big Ten play, then that would go a long way too.
Was there anything that happened Monday night that surprised you in terms of rotation or kind of and he's figuring it out too. Like, I'm not holding him to this, or I'm not holding you to it, but just in terms of something that surprised you rotationally Monday?
I was surprised that they were able to play Bruce Thornton, John Mobley, and Gabe Cupps together as much as they were. And I think certainly some of it was matchup based, that this team was going to pressure you and, you know, run and gun all the way up and down the court and foul the heck out of you and all those things. Like, I just felt like it was going to be difficult for Ohio State to play those three guards together because they're all 6'1 or 6'2 and that you're giving up so much size, but it helped them in this game. And I wonder, like, I think going forward, that's something that could be, you know, they could use that more than I expected them to. Just because I feel like you do give up a lot of size with that lineup. But otherwise, like, that was such a wonky game. I'm still sitting here on Thursday trying to decide, like, how much do we make of that? How much do I make of that? And I don't know if I've ever been more excited to see Ohio State play, like, a Purdue Fort Wayne, like they're going to tomorrow. I want to see them against, like, a team that's not going to, there are 162 possessions in that game. I mean, there's a possession every 15 seconds. Like, it was an NBA type of up and down. So, like, how does this team fare in a more traditional standard type of game? Like, I think I'll have a better answer for you that, you know, when they start playing some games like that.
I'll get you out of here on this one. Obviously doing a lot, and it's hard because these games aren't you know, the marquee games are going to have big crowds and all that stuff. But they tried a lot of stuff for atmosphere at the shot. Ross and Jake talked a lot about that this offseason. They debuted some of it. How did all of that stuff land first time out?
You know, I thought it was better. You know, I felt like, you know, I noticed like the sound system didn't seem as pervasive. I mean, like it sounded like you weren't, your ears weren't ringing because it was just like excessively loud for no reason. I thought that like the stuff they did in timeouts was fine. I thought the court looked cool. I think the lighting, looks good and really does kind of put an emphasis on the floor. You know, I thought it seemed better.
Yeah.
It was also hard because it was like every time they got to a timeout, I was frantically trying to catch up on like everything that had just happened. And then it was like on to the next one. Like I could barely get my head out of my notepad for that game. So again, yeah. I'll have a better answer for you when they play a more normal game.
Yeah. And we got one tomorrow. Appreciate your time as always, buddy. Thanks for giving us a little bit of it today.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
All right, there he goes. Adam Jardy, our good buddy with the Buckeye basketball team, covering at expert level at the Columbus Dispatch. We hit three things on a Thursday. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is the Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Light Auto Glass. We've talked about Brandon Ennis and the way he's played the last couple of weeks. Is that another one of those situations where it's taking advantage of the coverage that Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith are getting?
That's it. Yeah. And when he gets those opportunities, you know, he's going to have more and more of those. Got to take advantage of them. And you can see how explosive we can be when he gets the ball out and is able to do that. So whether it's on third down, first down, or in the red zone, those opportunities are going to come up for Brandon. So exciting for him and good to see him make some plays the last couple of weeks.
Okay. We'll have another comment in just a moment. Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
At Ohio State, we are the never afraid to innovate teams, the agile, get it done teams, the achieve more together teams, and the improve people's lives teams. Together, we are the Ohio State University.
Learn more about Ohio State at osu.edu/impact.
Now, the officials have been talking for quite some time.
Alrighty, let's see what they have to say.
Upon further review, there is no penalty on the play. However, we have conferred and discovered that Bob, the line judge, has saved a boatload for his kids' college using Ohio's 529 plan. It is tax-free, accepted nationwide. Bob recommends we all go to collegeadvantage.com. First down!
Well, that's not entirely unexpected.
Classic Bob.
Last weekend, Ryan, we saw Bennett Christian get in the end zone for the second time in his career. And you talk about players with journeys. He certainly has had a journey that is worth noting.
Yeah, that's for sure. But he's become a very good leader and somebody that has a voice and very well respected in the locker room and by the coaches, built trust every day. Glad to see him get a touch. You know, I think everybody, you can see the reaction on the sideline because he does a lot of the dirty work, throws his body around, and certainly is a Buckeye that, you know, everybody knows does so much for the team and is the glue of the tight end room, in my opinion.
Okay, this is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
For over 37 years, Buckeye Nation has known Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse for serving the best steaks in the city. Our thick-cut, aged steaks are a staple in Columbus. Columbus, with three locations in Upper Arlington, Dublin, and downtown. And just like the Buckeyes, we strive for excellence and an experience like no other. Hyde Park is proud to introduce the newly added wine room at our downtown Columbus location, where a new elegance in dining surrounds you, creating the ideal setting for any occasion or the perfect night out. Hyde Park is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
When it comes to all-wheel drive vehicles, nobody gives you more to choose from than Toyota, including the best-selling Camry and the best-selling RAV4.
You've also got Toyota's five brothers, which include the best-selling Tacoma and the legendary new 4Runner.
All-wheel drive gives you the traction you need for confident driving on any road, in any weather.
With 25 different all-wheel drive choices, there's only one thing you need to know.
Nobody knows all-wheel drive better than Toyota. Let's go places. This time,
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Ship and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
Started the show with this, I suppose. I don't know what's making this all come about. My hunch is it's the Disney Plus YouTube fight, the ABC, ESPN, SEC Network, YouTube TV fight, because some of the ratings were down over the weekend. Here are your top 10 most watched college football teams so far this season. Number one, Alabama. Number two, Georgia. Number three, Tennessee. Number four, Texas. Number five, Ohio State. Number six, LSU. Number seven, Oklahoma. Number eight, Florida. Number nine, Florida State. Number 10, Ole Miss. How many Big Ten teams? One. So
the Big Ten team.
Yeah, it's not a Buckeye problem, but the rest of that league, you're in some dire straits, kids. What do you have in the poll today,
Reese? Great segue into the Daily Fan poll, which asks, what is the worst football coaching job in the Big Ten? Rutgers, Maryland, UCLA, and Northwestern. Do you want to take a guess on who respondents thought is the worst?
I think it's Rutgers.
38% agree with you. 36% say Northwestern, 17% say UCLA, and 8% say Maryland.
It's not those that, I mean, it's not Maryland at all, because Maryland has money and they have proximity to talent. It's not, Northwestern's been to the Rose Bowl with multiple coaches. So it's, I mean, that's a nice job. They're building a brand new state-of-the-art stadium and they got a ton of money. And it's not UCLA either, because Rutgers is probably the right answer. They honestly should have Purdue on that list.
I was surprised.
I don't know why Purdue is not one of those four. Purdue is a worse job than all. I think Purdue's the second hardest job in the Big Ten behind Rutgers. Rutgers just never won ever, like ever. It's like it's so hard to overcome that and get people to want to go there. All right, time for three things on a Thursday.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Buckeye Lake Marina, Central Ohio's largest selection of new and pre-owned boats. Find your next dream boat at BuckeyeLakeMarina.com.
So after I took the boys, number one for me, I took the boys to school this morning, as I always do, the two oldest, and I hopped in the shower, and when I got out, I heard something very faint in the distance. Unmistakable, though. And it was Mariah Carey. And I don't want a lot for Christmas.
Oh, no.
And I...
The train is coming.
Dripping, put a towel around my midsection, and said, what are we doing here now? Really? Really? And apparently she'd had a morning, because what I got back was, just leave me alone. Okay. All right. I can tolerate trees and lights and all of it, and I'm fine with it. Like, it makes you happy. Live, damn it. Who am I to judge? But I can't hear that November 6th. I can't. Not 2 months of it. I can't do it.
Yeah, I think you can do it December 6th. And even that's a stretch. Wow. The fan poll was interesting, asking about the worst Big Ten job, because I did see Pat Fitzgerald, former Northwestern coach, pop on the College Game Day podcast, talk about how he feels vindicated after getting that $130 million lawsuit awarded to him for that wrongful termination. Well, it was settled, so I don't know if he got all $130 million of it, but they settled. There's an NDA, so they can't talk about it. Pat Fitzgerald's coming back to coach college football in this cycle. Was my takeaway from the fact that he would even go on the college football podcast, and it could probably be in the Big Ten.
I wonder Penn State.
Yep, that's when you mentioned his name, I was like, he's getting a head coaching job.
Before all of this stuff, the two things, the places I thought maybe he would entertain leaving his alma mater for were Michigan and Penn State. Those were kind of the two. But it's a pretty big lifestyle change from Chicago to State College, I'll tell you that.
If Wisconsin got rid of Luke, I feel like he's a fit there.
Fitz is 50.
That's it?
Got a lot of coaching left then.
Wow, I thought he was like more like 55.
The second thing for me, it has been a wonderful year for high school football on Friday nights. Maybe not so much tomorrow. Sounds like there's a possibility of some weather for the second round of the postseason. I will be over off of Carl Road for the DeSales Ashland matchup. Those two met in the playoffs last year, so this is round two. I'm calling this the Fighting Mark the Sharks versus the DeSales Stallions. Still trying to get Mark the Shark to maybe make a cameo tomorrow night on the broadcast, but should be a fun one watching those two play tomorrow.
Let's go, Sharky. Let's get in there. So I mentioned that Beamsy, the 11-year-old, had his big game up on the Cavs court yesterday afternoon. So I have a pair of Jordan 4s that one of the boys bought me years ago to, like, coach in. And our school colors are navy blue and gray. And so I said, all right. And they're Jordan 4s in that color scheme. And I'm like, I'm going to wear them. I've only worn them a handful of times. So I wore them. I had to referee one of the fifth grade games. And then I coached our game. And then I came back and I had Bootsy's practice. It was a long day. And I don't know how the hell I ever played in these things. That is the most uncomfortable shoe of all time. And the idea that I played basketball in them as an eighth grader or whatever I was at that time, maybe however old I was, probably more like sixth grader, I guess, fifth. The idea that I played, it's insane. The fact that he did. I could not wait to get back into Ultra Boosts. And maybe I'm just old now, but I'm like, I can't imagine running up and down the court in those things.
It's crazy. Like,
it's crazy.
That shoe.
They used to play in Chuck Taylor's.
Uh-huh. Was the Converse High Tops.
Yeah.
Like, come a long way in those. So I haven't followed Kirk Cousins in a long time. I don't watch much Atlanta Falcons games, but because he wasn't traded, he gets $90 million. Mm-hmm. Like, good for him. He's got one playoff victory.
Dude, his career earnings.
Good
ridiculous.
For him.
Because
I saw it today, and I'm like, oh, yeah, the Kirk's still with the Falcons. And
you ready for this? You ready for this? Career earnings?
It's good.
You ready? $294 million.
I would have guessed more. I would have guessed
$200
more. You like that.
By the time it's done, it's going to be $321. That's what he hasn't guaranteed that's owed. $321
million. Second thing for me, 30 years ago today, the hearts of Clevelanders were ripped out when Art Modell sat in Camden Yards and said that the Cleveland Browns were moving to Baltimore. Sometimes, on Sundays, I wish they'd have never came back.
It's one of the most stupefying. It is absolutely stupefying that somebody allowed the Cleveland Browns to leave Cleveland, the Seattle Supersonics to leave Seattle. Think about this. The NBA allowed for a team to leave Seattle and Vancouver to move to Oklahoma City and Memphis. That happened. That music means Ryan Day is coming up next. We're back tomorrow on a Football Friday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bobby Carpenter demands that you watch Morning Juice on YouTube. If you don't, Tito will move into your house.
Live at 6 a.m. on YouTube and streaming on the Fan app.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.